Hello, free people of the world. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Onnit.com. That's O-N-N-I-T. Onnit is a human optimization website. What that means is that it might not be to you. You might just be a dude listening going, next. But we sell shit that makes your body work better, shit that makes your mind work better, strength and conditioning equipment, supplements that improve cognitive function, supplements that can improve your endurance and strength. All the different various aspects of these things are explained at Onnit.com far better than I'm going to be able to do in a simple commercial. But our goal is just to provide you with all the different shit that we use. All the different things that I use as far as like strength and conditioning equipment, like kettlebells, things that can improve athletic performance, steel maces and steel clubs. All these different things are all, again, explained far better at Onnit.com. If you're a person who doesn't exercise and you've never tried anything like this before, I cannot stress enough to take it lightly. Start slow. Hire a trainer if you can afford one. And just, you don't need to do like every workout with a trainer. Just have somebody show you the correct motions, the correct way, the correct form to do like various physical exercises so that you don't hurt yourself. Because the whole goal of exercise, obviously, is to improve the way your body works. And if you break it along the way, that shit ain't improving nothing. That said, we sell a wide variety of weights, of kettlebells. We sell packages from like beginner kettlebell packages, which have three different weight sizes, 20 kilograms, 16 kilograms, and 12 kilograms, which are, what is 20? Was that 35 pounds? No, 50 pounds? 46 pounds. 45. Yeah. I don't know why we're doing kilograms. This is something that, because they were created in Russia. It's what kettlebells are is an ancient Russian method of lifting weights. It's like a cannonball with a handle on it, and using momentum and swinging these things. The goal of the kettlebell is to strengthen the entire body as one individual unit. Like a lot of times when you see people lifting weights, they do things like if you go to the standard gym setup. A lot of times people are doing what you call isolation exercises, like curls or things along those lines, tricep extensions, that are really just working one body muscle group. And the idea behind something like kettlebells is to work the entire body as one individual thing. So it strengthens the body all as one unit and also enhances athletic performance because of that. Because if you just develop strong biceps, like you're only working your bicep, you're not working your legs and your back at the same time, you're kind of doing yourself a disservice because you're going to create an imbalance. It's not natural to just have really strong biceps for no reason. It looks sexy. You want to have some fucking guns for the beach, kid. But you're going to get hurt. But we carry all the way up to very heavy kettlebells. We just started getting some really big ones in. We have the strongman kettlebells that just came in. Which I think go up to 48 kilograms. What the fuck is that? That's over 100 pounds.
That's right around 100.
Yeah. It's a lot of weight, bitch. It's too much for you. Start slow. Work out. Just do it smart, please. Whatever you do. I hate hearing people, I started kettlebells because you said and it fucking tore my shoulder apart. Don't do that. Exercise, eat correctly, get your fucking shit together, people, and start it all at Onnit.com. There's a wide variety of things, including workout DVDs. I can't stress this one enough. I talk about it all the time, but it's just because it's so good. The Extreme Kettlebell Cardio Workout DVD by a man named Keith Weber. Keith will be here in October. We're working out the dates right now. I'm very psyched to sit down and talk to him. He's a good dude, and he has a great workout regimen that you can follow. Also, strength and conditioning. Besides strength and conditioning equipment, we have massive amounts of supplements, healthy foods, including the Hemp Force Protein Bar. Hemp Force Protein Bar, which contains the finest quality hemp protein, very delicious, very low in fats. It's got healthy fats, minerals, fiber, protein, all pressed into a shape that's perfect to just stuff in your pocket or your bag and get the fuck out of there and have healthy protein and have something that, you know, fills your stomach up but doesn't make you feel like an asshole for doing it. Onnit.com, O-N-N-I-T, use the code word Rogan and save yourself 10% off. We're also brought to you by a new sponsor, and it's called MeUndies. Why did they decide to call their company MeUndies? I don't know, man. I don't know. But the idea behind it is They have the finest underwear that you can buy, and they will deliver it to you, order it online, and have it sent to you. I personally do not like going to a store and shopping. I don't like going shopping. Why is that? I don't know. It's just me.
I hate it, too.
It's not fun. It's a chick thing. Chicks like shopping.
I hate shopping.
Chicks like going places and trying things on, and I don't know, what do you think? And they step out.
Gas station. It's like, I hate fucking shopping.
I do almost all my shopping online now, if I can. I love it. Love shopping online. And MeUndies is a company now that has the most comfortable underwear you have ever tried. They're fantastic underwear. What does that mean? Like, have you ever had bad underwear? Yes, I have. I've had weird underwear where you cannot keep your balls from coming out of that hole in the front. Like, what is that, man? Figure that shit out. That's whack underwear, and whack underwear are really annoying. But the MeUndies brand, they just sent me a box of them 2 weeks ago. They fit great. They don't ride up on you. And they actually literally pull moisture away from your skin so that you're cool all day long. So they've designed these things, like, actually sat down and thought about it. They're all working out of a small warehouse in L.A. They're not a bunch of pretentious designers. They don't take themselves too seriously. And they make great underwear. Great underwear that looks great. If you go to the MeUndies website, though, it'll confuse the shit out of you as to what exactly they're doing. If you go to the MeUndies website, first of all, everything is people in their underwear walking around the street doing normal things, which I don't recommend, like this one with these two guys in their underwear with guns. Yeah. What are you guys doing? Fuck, why are you guys in your underwear with guns? What are you planning?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And they also, not only, it's so homoerotic. They're not just in their underwear with guns, but the two guys have their shoulders, like their elbows, on the shoulder of this other guy who has a gun. You know, if I was a psychologist and I was, like, really deep into reading into shit, I could go off on that just one photograph. Like, what kind of a gangbang are you guys planning? You know? It seems like one guy has earplugs on, too. I don't know. What is the
camo undies on, too.
Yeah. And what are the things around their necks?
I was going to say something. Those are earplugs.
Those are earplugs. Yeah. For guns.
Yeah, it's a lot. Big guns.
Okay. So they're firing off guns in their underwear. I don't recommend that. Ever. I don't think you should shoot guns in your underwear unless someone's breaking into your house and you happen to be in your underwear. But it seems like these dudes plan this shit out. I guess they're just trying to let you know that these are super comfortable underwear and you can use them to do anything. I support them. I think they are excellent underwear. And if you go to MeUndies.com/Rogan before September 1st, you will get 20% off your first order. That's 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/Rogan. Excellent underwear. And here's a statistic that's going to disturb the shit out of you. Most guys, when they were surveyed, how long does it take before you change your underwear or before you buy new underwear? How long do your underwears last? How long would you think?
I saw that. I'm not
7 years. Dudes keep drawers for 7 fucking years. 7 years of farts and dick drippage. Yeah. Rotate your underwear, son. Just go to MeUndies.com. Take care of it very easily. It's super easy to do. And for the U.S. and Canada, shipping is absolutely free. So MeUndies.com/Rogan. Save 20% off your first order. We're also brought to you by Audible.com. Last and not least, because Audible is awesome. I'm a huge fan of audio podcasts. And I'm also a huge fan of audio books. I'm a huge fan of taking time that would ordinarily be wasted time and actually making it very enjoyable. And that's what a book on tape can do for you. Audible has over 150,000 titles, fantastic books that you can choose from, including Bert Kreischer, our pal Bert Kreischer's The Life of the Party. Bert did a fantastic job on audio, on the audiobook version of it, and it actually sells better than the book version, which is really rare. But if you're a fan of Bert Kreischer, it totally makes sense because he's such an entertaining guy and he's a fun guy to listen to. So if you go to audible.com/Joe, you will get one free audiobook and 30 free days of Audible service. Audible is the leading provider of audio entertainment on the internet, and I can't stress enough how much I like that company. They've been around for a long time, and I've been a fan for a long time. They have so many different titles to choose from, And you literally can never run out of excellent books to listen to. And it makes a commute so much more interesting. And again, if you go to audible.com/Joe, you will get a free audiobook. And I recommend my friend Bert Kreischer's book, The Life of the Party. So go there, get a free book, audible.com/Joe. All right, Shooter Jennings is here. Why fuck around? Play the music and let's start the show.
Joe Rogan Podcast, check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
All right. Shooter Jennings, first of all, thanks for doing this, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank
it's cool
you.
As fuck. It's thank cool as fuck you. Having you in here. I love hearing about a guy online, listening to the music, and go, oh, shit, I got a new guy I'm into.
Right on.
So I've been tweeting about your shit over the last couple of months. I'm a huge fan. I love all the do you say Hierophant? Is that what you call
Hierophant?
It?
Hierophant, yeah.
Hierophant? I love that stuff.
I love that
Southern Comfort song. It's one of my favorites, man.
Yeah,
I listen to that one all the time.
You were in the airport or something tweeting about that.
Dude.
The house I grew up in was named Southern Comfort. Real quick, while we're on the Audible thing, by the way, I'm a huge audiobook fan. I will tell you a hilariously awesome and creepy experience is that I highly recommend. If anyone has like an hour and they're your buddy's thing, and they have listened to that book, get Dianetics, the audio. I'm serious, man. It's so creepy. It's like being in a fucking Philip K. Dick movie. It's like being in Total Recall or something.
Really?
Oh, man. The way the guy who reads it, the whole thing, like the whole package is so cool, man. You're like, oh, and, you know, the read the book commercials. Like my whole life, I'd always heard that shit. And I was like, I'm going to get the audiobook of Dianetics. I bet that shit's whack. And highly recommended.
Just for wackiness?
For wackiness, but by the end of it, you're like, You know, that's what's fucked up about it, is like the concept of what, because I guess Dianetics, like, I'm kind of obsessed with Scientology because it's so fucking retarded in one way, in one sense to me, but in the other sense, like, because it's so serious and all the craziness you hear about. So I've really looked into it, L. Ron Hubbard, and you know about Excalibur? Do you know about that?
What is Excalibur?
Okay. He wrote a book called Excalibur. Supposedly, the big rumor is that this book, it was like the foreshadowing for Scientology.
Mm-hmm.
And that like he tried to get it published, and like three or four people that read it committed suicide. So he like locked it in a vault, and there's like one copy of it, and no one ever knows where that is. But that was like where Scientology was born from. So like I'm so fascinated by it. So like Dianetics was his new book, like that he wrote. He's like, wait, I've got it figured out. Like, it's more like this, and kind of like, so Dianetics was kind of like the way of introducing what was in the Excalibur book to like the mass population. It's pretty fascinating.
That sounds like one of those In the Mouth of Madness type things. Like the John Carpenter book where the movie where the guy wrote a book and a bunch of people were killing themselves and going crazy and murdering people.
Sam Neill?
Yes.
Sam Neill was in it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was exactly. That's what the whole rumor about it is. And if you've seen The Master with Philip Seymour Hoffman when he played like the L. Ron Hubbard guy, he had a book in that. It was called like The Sword or something. Instead of Excalibur. But like, yeah, supposedly he like showed it to a bunch of people and they like went crazy. And apparently what the book is about, and I don't mean to like derail our entire conversation in this direction, but
don't worry, there's no derailing. It's just a conversation.
Yeah. This is the kind of shit I like to talk about. You know what I'm saying?
Me
like,
too, man.
Yeah. Supposedly there's, what the whole concept was about the mob mentality and breaking that apart. So like that, no matter what, everyone is really always alone, no matter if they're in a group. But when they're in a group, they act a certain way that's different. So there's a guy being hung. There's a scene in it where there's a guy being hung, and then there's the mob that wants him hung. And it goes and like analyzes like the people in the mob, and then analyzes the executioner, analyzes the guy who's getting hung. Like, I don't know. You know, I'm very fascinated with that kind of like psychology. And it's that's why the whole, you know, Scientology thing to me is so fascinating, because I'm like, how do these people, they pay money to join this fucking club that's like, you know, it's real like AA and all that stuff, in the sense that it's like, you know, your new friends and your old friends, and they have like, they assign people to you, and then eventually you kind of weed out all those other people. But the whole concept of it is taking, the whole concept of Dianetics is taking like when you're a little kid and a dog bites you, and then for the rest of your life you're scared of dogs. Like the whole concept behind Dianetics is that they can take the memory, what they call a reactive memory, which is like the dog thing, and they can turn it into a like a regular memory, so that you won't like get rid of all of those kind of little things that fucked you up through mm-hmm. life. That's what the concept of clear is.
Yeah.
And so that when you those things become, you're not reactive anymore. So if like you hate your dad, and then for that reason you like react a certain way to people your whole life, like you can get that out of there, so you'll never like act uncalm, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then you have to pay them a lot of money to have an auditor to go through your life and figure all that shit out for you. That's where they make all their cash.
Well, you give them a certain percentage of your income.
Right.
It's just like tithing in a regular church. I think you give them 10%, especially at the highest levels.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't even know that. That's
Tithing is a big one. That's a big one with religions. That's the way they get you.
Right. Like, well, I knew that with the other ones, but I didn't know that there was like a tithing process. I know that they do a lot of things. Like I used to rehearse. I've been living here 15 years, and my old band, we used to rehearse on Hollywood and Vine in this place, and there was a daycare next door. And someone told us later.
Hollywood and Vine?
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's crazy. No shit, right? It was like, do you remember? Well, you know, it's right across the street from the L. Ron Hubbard exhibit and all that. Like on Ivar, like on that
side.
Yeah,
okay.
And somebody's like, yeah, that's a Scientology daycare. They're like real hush-hush about it, but it's Scientology. So, like, you know, like a lot of that shit going down. I'm probably going to get murdered tonight.
No, you'll be fine. Scientology has become such a joke.
I know. Over the last few years.
If this was 20 years ago, you'd have an issue, but the internet has sort of exposed them in a way that's made them seem so preposterous.
Like, seriously preposterous. It's funny, though.
Well, they have that big psychiatry kills thing, too, that big exhibit. Yes. Is that on Sunset, too, or is it, where the fuck is that?
Hey, is that what that is?
Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
Is it on Sunset or Hollywood?
Because I think it's on
Hollywood.
There's
a Mac store that I buy hard drives, and I saw that mm-hmm. across the street. I didn't know that was a...
Scientology.
Wow, I got to go in there and check that out.
Yeah.
Because you know? They don't believe in that, and they don't believe in a lot of medicines. But in certain ways, like... I kind of see their point in mm-hmm. certain ways. Like, I mean, I've talked to psychologists before in my life. I mean, I went to one for like relationship counseling, and of course, like it becomes like they want to talk about you. And I'm like, I'm the kind of guy who's like, I don't like whatever problems and issues I've had in my life. I work through them. Like I've never seen the need to really kind of, I don't know. I'm like an angry guy. There's not shit I'm angry at from when I was little. I've kind of dealt with all that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when I see Scientology, like Tom Cruise being like, screw all that stuff, I'm like, yeah, Tom Cruise is like, that's cool, even though you're weird, you know? But
you invited him to your show yesterday to Mirror Records.
I know, I did.
I saw that online.
It's like, you too, come on down.
Come on down, Tom Cruise. I want to talk to you about your fucking magic.
Yeah, I was like Joe Rogan, and I was real serious about the other three, you and Billy Ray Cyrus and Marilyn Manson. It's like, come on down, like...
But Tom Cruise, that would have been odd if he showed up.
It would have been awesome.
I need to talk to you. Stop being so glib.
Have you seen the guy on, and I'm supposed to not like this guy because he did diss my best friend and manager, which is not cool. But besides that, previous to that, before it got sticky, there's a guy on Twitter named Not Tom Cruise. Do you know this guy?
No.
Dude, he's hilarious. He just talks about how he's like blowing rails with Britney Spears all day long and driving down. Like he's just talking about being coked out of his face and like how he's like Scientology rules and he's like looking for bitches and like hanging out with, you know, Travolta and doing rails and shit. He keeps graduating. He's like,
I think that their stance against psychiatry, it's they've got some good points, but it's like all things. It's not a complete black and white issue. It's not like psychiatric drugs are all bad or that antidepressants are all bad. Because I personally know people that were like close to suicide.
Yes.
Man.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that too. I think that stuff is good. It can be good.
Can be.
But it can also be a crutch,
yep.
You know, in that way. And I think a lot of times, man, here's the thing. I have one of my dearest friends, guy who worked for me, I'm not trying to be a downer with this, but his brother... This guy, Farron Miller, who actually co-wrote one of the songs on this George record. And, dude, I walked out of my house without my vinyls. I have a stack of vinyls for you. So this means we have to hang out.
Oh, we'll hang out, man. I'd be happy to.
But Farron Miller co-wrote Living in a Minor Key, which is on the George record. And Farron worked for me for 9 years, still does, but he's in a band now, and he's doing awesome. His brother was on those medicines and stopped hard, like cold turkey, and mm-hmm. killed himself. because it went just crazy. You know what I mean? So like, you have to like that. You have to really, really be responsible with like those kind of drugs that change your mental, you know. And sometimes, like you said, sometimes it does wonders for people and it changes their life. And then sometimes it can be really damaging. So, you know, you have to be careful. But at the same time, Scientology, they're like no drug stance. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's responsible either. I think there's a reason why they've come up with a lot of these drugs, and some people have benefited tremendously. There's people that just have natural chemical imbalances in their brain.
Yes.
And the idea that someone who doesn't know how your brain works can say, you know, oh, you don't need it because I don't need it. Or you don't need it because Mike doesn't need it. Tom Cruise doesn't need it. So, you know, John fuck over here, he doesn't need it either. That's crazy. Some people benefit from them tremendously. And sometimes they can use, you can use those things as a bridge. Like, you got really tough times in your life, you can use these psychiatric drugs as a bridge and then get to a healthy place and then wean yourself off. Like, get your life in order. I've read stuff about people doing that too. I don't necessarily think they're all bad, but I think that
I don't think there's
a lot of people that don't take care of themselves, and then just they get depressed and just take a pill and then now they're better. Well, maybe not. Maybe you would have been better off if you started eating better and maybe stop drinking as much and do a little bit of exercise every now and then, and probably you'd feel better.
Yeah.
And it would help, you know. So I also the Scientology thing, like when you see a guy like Tom Cruise, who is undeniably wacky, but also undeniably successful. The guy is always positive. Like, he does these interviews, he's got a lot of great energy, and it's like, man, there's a benefit to that. There's definitely something to that.
And there's definitely something to that, and especially when you get a guy who's in that much, I mean, that much power and has that had that much success, you know, and has that much influence. Like, I mean, you know, either they're like, I know that they treat him like he's the like, you know, L. Ron Hubbard Jr. or something. So I'm sure he's loving that side of it. But the reality is like, for him to have stuck by it, I mean, there's got to be something to it. I mean, like I said, the audiobook of Dianetics, as funny as that is, it is so fascinating because it explains why he's always in a fucking good mood all the time. he's like, I'm really good at this clear thing. You know, he's really figured it out, and he's like really happy all the time. And nothing, you know, who knows?
He might be. Or, you know, he might just shut the door when the day is done and fucking wail and scream and fucking fish all over the ground, flopping around like a fucking animal. I mean,
you know, guys like that, right? I have a couple of friends where I'm like, somebody's getting beat somewhere on this guy because they're so nice. You know, somewhere he's going home fucking punching somebody's lights out, you know.
Well, there's people that you can tell they're holding back. And you can tell, okay, all right, fine. You know, and you tell as soon as this guy gets away, he's going to fucking do something crazy. Like, there's some people that are actually calm, and then there's some people you can tell they're keeping it together, but there's a monster inside them just raging at the cage, just trying to fucking get out. Yeah, that's uncomfortable when you like, you know, if you tried to explain to someone, you're like, well, listen, everything he said was good. He used all the right words. He was very, very, but I knew this motherfucker was hating it inside.
Inside,
and they'd be like, oh, that's just your perception, sir. I mean, you can't prove that. No, you can't. But everybody knows that one dude that's like that.
Yeah, of course, man. It's like, yeah, it's so funny. It's true, though.
My next door neighbor in my old house was a Scientologist. He's a nice guy. Super nice guy.
Why be a Scientologist when you're just some guy? Like, that's what I want to know. Because they worship actors and they worship that. So why?
Like, I think they worship the actors and they worship artists because that influences others to become Scientologists. I think that's the strategy, you know?
Yes, right. I mean, yeah, and they kind of deify like anyone who does any kind of art as kind of a superior being.
Well, in a way, like, listen, okay, I'm a Shooter Jennings fan. If I found out that Shooter Jennings is really into Scientology, I go, oh, well, that guy's cool, man. What the fuck is up with this? Man, and then
so
you start reading into it, and you go, oh, I see. So it keeps him positive. And that keeps him putting out badass music. Okay. okay, maybe I'll fucking try this. And that's all you need. Like, Scientology, man. Look, Tom Cruise is a bad motherfucker, okay? Tom Cruise doesn't take any drugs. Tom Cruise drinks water every day. Tom Cruise runs marathons. Tom Cruise is a fucking beast. I want to be like Tom Cruise. And next thing you know, you're fucking holding on to these Campbell soup cans that are attached with little wires, yeah. And they're auditing you.
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
No.
I did it. Yeah, I did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'll do it with you. I would love to do it. I'll do it in a heartbeat.
I don't know if they would take me in now. I mean, you have to have someone who doesn't know who you are. And
right.
I definitely found a dude who didn't know who the guy was in his late 50s.
Did you just walk in?
It was in San Diego. I was down there filming for this TV show that I was doing on CBS called Game Show in My Head, where we put these little earpieces in someone so I could talk to them, and then I gave them like tasks that they had to go do. Like, they had to sell water to people that came out of a hose. Like, they had to do a bunch of like wacky shit. They had to convince people to tell they had to play a fake news reporter and convince people to tell them they had been abducted by aliens and all this different wacky shit. But while we were there, we're filming, they had this Dianetic set up, because it was in this outside public place where a lot of foot traffic was. So they had the Dianetic set up, and they had their e-meter or whatever they call it. Yeah. Is that what they call it? And it's like two cans. It looks like two like things that look like a Campbell soup can that you took the wrapper off, and it's connected with these strings. And so,
literally, yeah. It's a Campbell soup can with the yarn.
Yeah.
Just hold on to this. And
so I did it, and the guy wasn't very compelling. He wasn't that good at it. But I got to ask him all sorts of questions and read into it, and they gave me some brochures or something like that. Tried to get me to go down there.
What when he did the auditing, though? I mean, how far do they don't really, I'm sure, because they're trying to convince someone to come back, that they're not going to start delving into like real personal shit. But I'm sure, like what do you do? What kind of questions
I don't remember, because it was very unremarkable. I remember I was baked, which is part of the problem, which is why I was willing to do it in the first place, because otherwise I would have probably just hovered and watched other people do it. But it was dumb questions about your childhood. Are you happy with your career? You know, are you happy in your relationship?
Right.
And, you know, and they just get a reading on you, allegedly, from this non-scientific, you know, measuring instrument.
Yeah.
It's just so wacky.
That's so wacky. So I see we could spend the whole thing talking about this, because it's one of those things where, like, there's a bunch of people in on a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're like just wanting someone to say, okay, we're just fucking with you. It's fine. But no one does. You know what I mean?
Well, those belief systems, the thing about having those belief systems is that they're very empowering for people who believe in them. Like, if you look at it and go, wait a minute, fucking planet Xenu, really?
Yeah.
You know,
see, that
like,
shit's insane.
Like, I'm reading about this, after you brought up Excalibur, what you're talking about, and I pulled up that website that mocks Scientology, Xenu.net.
Oh, I've never been there, but this is not going to be my favorite site, bro.
They have everything. They have the entire Scientology, everything about what they believe.
The operating things,
yes,
manual. I grabbed that off WikiLeaks and was like looking at that. Is the operating things manual, like, level 3, which is apparently where, I guess, Tom Cruise is like 4 or 5 or 6 or something, but he was 3 a couple years. Like, they have different manuals, you know. So
he was 3 a couple years ago, and now he's 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah, I don't know where he's at. I haven't been keeping up with his level, what rank he's at, but I know he's ranked up because they've like given him. They made up some new award for him. And did you ever see that video that leaked?
Yes.
Where he's like using all this stuff. That was like they made up this thing they'd never had before. It was like Guardian of the Galaxy Award, you know? And they like gave it to him, and he was like, he's like saying all that shit that made no sense and using all their words and stuff, you know, and that leaked to the internet and people putting music to it and shit.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's a work of art.
It is, man. I mean, it is almost like something that you'd see from some artist who's doing some like fucking piece,
yeah,
you know, where he's gonna man, that'd be so brilliant if like he just all of a sudden flipped and told everybody everything.
Yeah, I've been just, listen, it helps my acting. If I could pretend to really be into Scientology.
For this long. It's like the Dumb and Dumber movie, the new one coming out. Have you seen the preview for it?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, it's genius. But there's like a whole thing where Jim Carrey's character is like in a insane asylum over that chick, the Mary Samsonite, as they called her from the first one. And then it turns out he was like joking like for like 20 years and yet Lloyd, he's like, Lloyd, you mean to tell me that you've been faking for 20 years all for a gag? And he's like, yep. It's like that. It'd be amazing if he did that. That's the only way a good politician would work. The only way that you could have a president in this country that was actually going to care about the people is they'd have to lie their way from the beginning to the moment they get in office, and then have to flip. And then
you would have to also have a cabinet that was in on the lie. Like, you'd have to have everybody with you that was working with you. Like, okay, we're just fucking around. We're going to get in there, and we're going to just change
everything. See, that would never, you'd never be able to get it. You'd never be able to trust another person.
Yeah. I think the system is so far rigged, though, that it doesn't matter.
It's, obviously, because it's the same people are, like, just running it. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like whoever's, who, you know, when they had, when Windows 95 had the fucking Start Me Up and the Rolling Stones, and now, like, whatever their commercials are, like, now it's the same fucking company. It just looks different, everything, you know.
Right.
I mean? Yeah, I think it's silly when people are, like, I think voting is silly. This is my whole thing with that, because it's like, what is the fucking difference? Like, first of all, there's people who are like, so, I mean, I may be going against a lot of people's opinions of this, but like, people who are so gung-ho on these certain politicians and lobbying for this person, and they're like so excited that Obama is going to like fucking change everything. And it's such, I mean, yeah, it's awesome that like our first black president, that's awesome. But otherwise, like, it's the same fucking game, same shit over and over. So I look at people who are like really gung ho about one guy. I'm like, are you fucking crazy? Like,
yeah.
You're buying this? I mean, nobody's bought anything for so long. I mean, like, you know, like Bill Clinton goes on, you know, Arsenio Hall, like that changed. Like, have you watched that 90s thing that has been on National Geographic recently? There's a series called the 90s, and it's like 6 hours, the whole thing. And I sat and watched it one day. And it's awesome, but it really reminds you how much shit you weren't paying attention to in the 90s and how rigged it all was, like everything. Like, Osama bin Laden was on, like, they did an interview with him in, like, 98 or 96. When was OJ? 94?
Yeah.
It was right around there. I don't remember if it was
94.
If it was OJ, I don't remember if it was OJ or Monica Lewinsky, but one of those things was going on at the moment. And 400,000 people watched this interview with Osama bin Laden. He's like, he says on the interview, he's like, we're going to fuck you, and you're going to watch it on TV, and you're going to be crying when it happens. And like 400 people watched it, and nobody cared. And like at the exact moment they were airing it is when like Monica Lewinsky or OJ was like in the prime, and everyone's like looking over here while like this guy over here. And Osama's just as fucking bullshitty as fucking the presidents and everything. Like, yeah, right. Like, Osama did not fly that plane. I mean, there are some people that did that shit, and there are people involved, and we will never know the truth about any of it. So, I mean, no matter how hard we dig, you know what I mean? So it's like, to me, it all seems so silly when people get so riled up. Like, they have to believe something. It's like Satanism. You have to believe in God to be a Satanist. That seems so stupid to me. Like, you have to be a Christian. If you want to be in this Church of Satan, you have to be a Christian first, because then you have to believe that whole thing, to believe that there is a Satan, to join the Church of Satan. That's so silly to
me. Is that true?
Yeah, well, I mean,
I thought, though, that Satanism, like, really in its finest form was really just about hedonism.
Well, yeah, that's true. But
experiencing
like
pleasure.
But
as
the
much
concept
as possible.
See, I mean, there's like the Crowley right? Church, and mm-hmm. there's like the kind of like the LaVey Church, which is what you're kind of talking about, which is just essentially like do anything, hedonism, essentially, yes. But like the writings and the teachings and the things that where they reference Satan as, and, you know, and they all those kind of like rituals and shit are silly, because it's like you've got to be in the frame of reference of Christianity and the Bible and all that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was really scary, it'd be something you've never heard of and some creature you've never heard of, and you're like, be terrified, you know. It's not the same bad guy from the Bible. We're just going to make it into a thing, you know. That's why it all seems so silly. It's just,
yeah,
you got to believe in magic and fairy tales and shit to make it all happen.
Well, you kind of do have to believe in magic and fairy tales if you believe a guy like Obama's going to fix the country.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
The system is so beyond rigged. It's so transparently rigged.
Yes, you have to end, if to fix the system, you have to end banking, you have to end the Federal Reserve, you have to get the corporations out of control of the media and everything. I mean,
end representative government. You'd have to end the influence of representative government by special interest groups and lobbyists.
Yes.
You'd have to completely revamp
everything.
It's a system that's just completely broken. Like,
yes.
There's nothing working about it. It's there's so many like fucked up pieces of it that as it trickles down from the top to the bottom, it's just, you know how like when water Like water goes through when you see springs, like natural springs that come out. That water's going through all this rock and all this this ground, and in doing so, it filters everything out. So the water comes out really pure and delicious to drink.
Yeah.
But it could start out, you know, really fucked up, and then it all gets well. The opposite is true with politics. Like you could have a great idea, and you could have you'd have someone who has great intentions, but by the time they get through the filter of corporations and special interest groups and lobbyists and this and that, and it comes out empty.
Yes.
It's like there's nothing left.
It's always going to do that because there's always they want it to be that way. You know, that to me, like you said, it's so fucked up, and it really is. It's really because of that the 99%ers, 1%ers thing. It's because you just have these, the corporations have too much control, and they're like the net neutrality thing. They're trying to cut that out, mm-hmm. and that's like they're literally giving all the power to like these, you know, Viacom and shit like that.
Not only that, Viacom is any time you look at a corporation as an individual, which is what they keep trying to do. They're doing that as far as their ability to donate to political campaigns.
Yeah.
They're doing it as far as like their responsibilities. Like they're trying to look at corporations as if these entities should be given rights like an individual, given rights like a human being. But that's crazy, because in doing so, what you're also doing when you have a corporation is you dissolve the responsibility of each individual for the actions of the group.
Right.
If you're going to give corporations the responsibilities, or if you're going to give corporations the rights of an individual, you should also be able to charge every individual in the corporation as if they were guilty for anything that the corporation is in trouble for.
Right.
And if you did that, then it would change the actions entirely of the corporation. Because right now, like say if you are part of a corporation, this corporation likes to go to Guatemala and build cell phones, and in the meantime you fucking shoot rabbits and fucking poison the wells, and you know who knows what kind of horrible anti-human shit they're doing in these third world countries, and pollution and genocide, and you know there's a group of people that doesn't want them to clear cut, so they fucking gun these people down, and then you find out about it all later, and everyone involved in the corporation should be responsible for
right.
that. And that's the only way you would ever stop any of that shit from going on.
Right.
If you looked at BP, perfect example, the oil spill in the Gulf, which just fucked up so many people's lives. I mean, there's so many people that don't have a voice. You're not hearing from the fishermen. You're not hearing from the people that had to clean that shit up. You're not hearing from the people that lived in the towns close to the water that got really sick because of the dispersants. There's so many individuals. If everyone in BP was prosecuted as fully responsible for the actions of BP, shit could get crazy.
Yeah.
Like literally every single executive, every single everybody that's a part of a corporation. They got raises. You know what I mean? It's subsidized. That's what's even crazier. Oil is subsidized. Ugh. You know, the amount of fuckery that's involved when you get heavy duty money involved in corporations, and then those corporations have influence on politics, and they have influence on the way laws are formed and structured, the way our society functions. It's just, it's madness. It's madness. And I don't know what the solution is, but until you figure out a way to not have these big groups of people that have this diffusion of responsibility, you know, because if Shooter Jennings is a part of BP and BP does something fucked up and you're like, man, that's fucked up. I can't believe my company did that. But, oh, well, I got a raise. I didn't do anything. You can sleep tight knowing that you didn't do anything personally. Yeah. But you're right, a part of a machine that did something really fucked up.
If I was held accountable for that, I'd be so pissed. I'd be like, I'd be like, it'd be beyond that. I mean,
exactly.
That's fascinating. That's a fascinating point. I mean, right? All these companies, the courts are in the favor of the corporations usually, and it's like I can't believe what three companies own 80% of all television or something.
Something ridiculous like that. Yeah.
And in the '80s, it was like 60 companies. And now it's three.
Yeah.
And it's like just and you just look at the way that the world is, the way that we react to the media, the way we react to this shit, like I don't know. It's amazing. It did feel like when we were younger that like when things like the BP oil spill happened and stuff, like I think if that happened now that we wouldn't hear about it.
What do you mean? If the BP oil spill just happened.
That wasn't How long ago did
BP
that
was just a couple of years ago.
That was like 10 years ago.
No. Yeah, it was four years ago.
Was?
Yeah.
Fuck, never mind. I don't know what I'm
talking about. The big one was the Exxon Valdez. Yeah. That happened that in 1988,
first
right?
First one we heard
That was
about.
A big one. That was a big one. Which is, by the way, that area is still fucked.
Of course it is.
1988, and they killed off a massive amount of salmon and the
Godzilla's
fisheries.
Godzilla's about
fucked.
To come out of there, man.
Yeah, but then there's people like you and I that drive cars and, you know, need gas and, need, you know, you buy an iPhone and how's it going to fucking get to the Apple store? Someone's got to put that bitch in a truck and it's got to drive it over there. There's no other way. You know, the whole system is just, it's been set up without a whole lot of foresight. Like, they, you know, it was set up to deal with what's available right now. And no one sort of saw the future of how things are going to get ugly and where it could become problems and
how fast,
how much carbon can you get into the air until it starts fucking with the weather. And, you know,
right.
It's just so much. And then there's so much momentum also. Once, like, the thing about, like, politics and the thing about the influence of corporations and special interest groups is that it's sort of been this way for so long that to come in now and try to, it's almost like there's a train running through your neighborhood. Chung, 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 and it's just train. Like, we got to stop this train. Do you grab it? Like, how do you, do you hold on to it? What we need to do is put some stuff on the track. Well, it's just going to run over that stuff. Well, how the fuck do you stop the train? Well, you got to grab the back and put a lot of weight on it. Is that going to work? No. Well, that all the things that we're doing to try to, like, to reform politics, like, from an individual point of view, whether it's complaining about it online or writing blogs or doing this and that, it's akin to trying to grab a hold of the back of the train and dig your heels
absolutely
in.
Yeah, they, I mean, yes, I agree. The only way to deal with it is move.
You know to where, though?
I don't know.
Iceland or somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mean, like, move in USA, but, I mean, in a metaphor, I mean, kind of like, don't you feel like, I mean, I feel like the only, out of the people that I've kind of read and researched that are kind of like this anti-establishment shit, it seems to be that if they tell you, you know, you've gotta do this now, you've gotta wear a blue shirt every day. The only way to fight any of it is just by not doing it. You know what I mean? Like, just whatever. But at this point in time, they've convinced this entire country and they've convinced the entire world that this is how things work and you have to go along with it.
Yeah.
Like jobs. And, you know, they like the fact that everyone is freaking out about money all the time. They squeeze the middle and lower class out of that, you know, so that they're freaked out all the time that both parents are having to work all the time. The kids are in shitty daycares where the education is terrible, and it's like that's how they keep that in control, you know what I mean? But most people just walk through life and accept that and just say that's the way it is. And you know, it's very few people that actually stand up and try and figure something else out. But there's not really a solution, especially that someone like me could give anyone. But at the same time, like, I can sit back and look at it and comment on it, because, like, with the Black Ribbons record, that was my, you know, my getting, like, it was right when the economy fell in 2009, at the very beginning, going 2008 to 2009, and George Bush was missing, and Obama was looking real glorious at the time, but nobody was doing anything about the collapse of the economy, and then the bank bailouts were happening, and it was just like, man, this is insane. It was like the scariest little point of time, you know, and that's kind of where that album came out of, and for me, it was really my comment on the whole thing, and by having Stephen King be the DJ and do all that shit, like what his character was, really what the record was about. And it was kind of like keeping hope and hang, you know, small communities and family and you know, those kind of like friendships and things like that level is the only way that people, like, unions, you know, were started, because it was like people were like, I can't take this shit. We can't take this shit anymore. And they said, like, that connection, that level, that's where you can grab the train and you can end, you know, when enough people, it's like that Occupy thing, man. When I was in New York living at the time when the Occupy Wall Street thing happened, and my daughter was going to a school in the financial district. So, like, when I drop her off at school and me and my buddy would walk over to the Occupy Wall Street, just hang out in the middle of the whole thing, you know, and it got a bad rap and it had all these different things, but those motherfuckers were standing up to the man, and the man was like fucking shooting the bean bags at him and shit, and You know, it was really crazy. Like they had books, and the cops were burning the books and shit. It was like some scene out of like Nazi Germany when we walked over. There's pouring rain. There were people in the trees. Like every 10 or 20 minutes, like a whole bunch of cops with those fucking guard things would run through the fucking place and knock some guy over.
Oh, those shields?
Like, yeah, the big shields. Riot shields? Know? Yeah, like riot shit. Like their cops are in riot. But we're... greatest scene. I think someone filmed it and I was there for it. I'm sitting in the middle of that thing, that encampment, the Occupy Wall Street thing with my friend Lincoln, and we turn around, man, and this fucking cop comes running with that fucking shield and just slips because it's raining and he just eats shit and falls down, man. And it's like three or four of these fucking hippies are like, hey, you okay, man? You know, even though the rest of them are like, fuck you, pig. You know, it was pretty funny, man. This motherfucker just ate shit running into that thing and everybody's just laughing about it.
That all that Occupy stuff to me, it signals that. This possibility, like, it wasn't entirely successful. It sort of awakened people to the idea of protesting, you know, that you could protest on a mass scale to get a lot of attention, and that people are willing to get involved, because a lot of people did get involved.
Yeah.
But what it also said to me is, if things got real squirrely, like, remember when we almost invaded Syria?
Yes.
You know, and then the response was so strong against it that you don't hear a peep about invading Syria. I mean, when Obama came on television and gave that speech, it was almost like invading Syria is inevitable. And everybody was like, fuck you, man. Fuck you. And then it stopped. There was silence in the news. Like, you literally don't hear a peep out of the government talking about the inevitable invasion of Syria. It just doesn't exist anymore. And because the right and the left...
Robert Blake kills his wife or something on television. Everybody's like, ooh, look over here. This thing's happening. You know, and we forgot about it.
The right and the left were against it. Yeah. And if they had gone forward, I think that an action like that, and I think they're calculated in that response, that like when you have a million people like a Shah saying... There was one of the dictators. I forget which one it was that was ousted.
Egypt? No.
I forget which one it was. It was a long time ago, but it was because he had said that if there was more than three people that were together, that were protesting together as a group, they would be shot on sight. I forget which dictator it was. And within 2 days, 3 million people were in front of his castle calling for his head. And it was like, oh, shit. Like, when you have a million people in the streets that are calling for your head, the gig is up. And the real numbers when you deal with the president and the Secret Service and then the government and the military, the actual numbers of those people that you would need to protect against a mob of 5 million Americans that have had enough and then come with rifles and guns and just storm the gates. Like, everyone worries. Like, people say, well, what do you do? The Second Amendment. What do you need a gun for? Why do you need a gun? You don't need a gun. Like, that was written back when there was muskets. Let me tell you something.
That's if the dumbest thing ever.
If the shit hits the fan like that, and all of a sudden you've got 3 or 4 million people that are showing up on the White House lawn, and then they start storming in mass, and they literally call for the president's head and rip him apart on national television. That's not outside the realm of possibility. Given a few terrible decisions, a natural disaster, a nuclear bomb goes off somewhere in Chicago, the fucking shit hits the fan, and then next thing you know, there's a million people with guns.
Apple buys Jesus, you know.
Anything can happen. Anything. And that's what I got out of Occupy Wall Street. I got out of, like, this is this kind of dissent. It's manifesting itself in this form right now, where there's a bunch of people with fucking drum circles, and they're saying enough is enough.
See, that was too hippie. It was that was the one issue. It was too like
kumbaya.
Yeah, it was. I mean, even though it got rowdy there at the end, it's like it wasn't enough. You know what I mean? That's what happens when liberals go protest, and then there's when the right wingers protest. They have a whole different ritual. But it's like I feel like when you look at all of that, like you said, it's the power of it, man. I mean, the Edward Snowden shit, we get into that, you know, you could get into the power of like how that's changed. Remember that everyone was like, ooh, the cloud is so fucking cool. That's going to do everything. And then Snowden comes out and they're like, shit, we don't want our shit on the cloud. Like, I mean, they start changing, like rebranding the concept of the word of the cloud, you know, like you go to Europe and it's still the cloud. But here, I think everyone started getting a little like,
well, it doesn't matter if it's the cloud because they're going right into your goddamn email.
They're going into your hard drive.
They're hacking your hard drive. They're going right in there, pulling out all your data, pulling all your credit card information, putting out all your contacts. You know, if you are a person that is involved in some controversial activity, everyone that you call, everyone that you talk to, they get monitored now.
Yeah.
Like if you start talking crazy shit about the government on this podcast and then you make a phone call.
Right.
If the NSA decides to monitor you, they're going to monitor your buddies. They're going to monitor people you fucking play pool with. They're going to monitor a guy you go drinking with. Like everybody gets monitored and you all become suspects.
I started getting monitored after I went on this show.
Oh, before you even decided to go on the show. When I was tweeting about you, you probably started getting monitored.
Probably immediately.
You're probably already monitored before that.
Probably. Yeah. I wouldn't doubt that.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's like, look, we're not criminals. There's not, these aren't criminals. The idea that you're monitoring 99% of the country or whatever the fuck the numbers are. What, is everybody a criminal? And then they're monitoring each other.
Yeah.
Like the Senate, the NSA was, they were spying on the goddamn Senate.
Man, did you read the thing about the World Warcraft with one of the documents, you know, that game, the
World of Warcraft.
Yeah, it's like a online role-playing game with like millions of players going around the world, and they had NSA agents in there because they were saying that terrorist groups were meeting in those games. They would go in the game and they'd meet and they had to talk in there. So they said that they had so many NSA agents in World of Warcraft that they had to assign other NSA agents to watch those NSA agents inside World of Warcraft. I mean, can't you see these motherfuckers sitting there like playing like he's like a level 50 wizard, you know? He's like, yeah, man, we're gonna bust some fucking terrorists today. Fuck yeah, and kill a dragon, you know?
Meanwhile, they're busting other people who are pretending to be terrorists so that they can bust other terrorists.
Man, I was like, yes, that's what a great idea. I'm gonna go in an online game and.
I wonder how many times there have been undercover sting operations where an undercover drug dealer was selling drugs to an undercover DEA agent posing as a guy to buy drugs.
That's a movie.
Isn't it a movie?
We should write that.
It totally
is a movie.
Just
write it into a movie.
And they wind up killing each other and then everyone tries to cover it up and it becomes some crazy story. I mean, it must have happened before. It has to have had happened.
Kind of like 21 Jump Street with the end of the movie with the cameo with the, what's his name? Johnny Depp. Did you see the new 21 Jump Street?
No.
Oh, it's great.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it fun?
It's a great cameo of Johnny Depp, though.
Yeah.
Just blew that for you, then.
I don't think it's a spoiler alert. I think I'll be okay.
The undercover guy blowing it for the other undercover guy kind of thing.
It's just when these guys start spying on each other, it's like, does the CIA think that the Senate is a bunch of criminals? Is that what's going on? Or do you just have carte blanche to just spy on people? So you're like, fuck it, let's spy on these guys. Let's spy on everybody. I don't trust him. Fuck that guy. Let's spy on him. Let's find out where his dick pictures are hiding in his hard drive.
They said they passed those around the office with the chick.
Of course they did.
And stuff.
They did it also. They like spied the people that were in the office. They spied on ex-girlfriends. they would find ex-girlfriends.
Now, see, that's the smartest thing they probably did. You know what I mean? Man, you could really... you know what? After that girl, I'm going to join the NSA. I'm going to work my way all the way to the top just so I can fuck her for the rest of her life.
Yeah. It's just, when the CIA spies on the Senate, I really think that they should bring everybody involved and lock them up.
Yeah,
I just like, you guys, you not only did you violate everything that you're supposed to be standing for, you guys are supposed to be looking out for us. The way you're looking out is by spying on the fucking Senate. Do you think that the Senate is bad? Do you think that they're involved in, are they terrorists? Are they the enemy? Are they working for the fucking Russians? Like, what are you doing? The fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You're wasting money. Like, you should go to jail just for wasting tax dollars, just for fraud, for pretending that you're here resolving democracy or that you're here protecting and serving. You should go to jail just for misrepresenting what your job is.
Yeah.
You guys are goddamn crooks.
Yeah, I mean, a bunch of them, you know. And that's why I love, like, I'm on the Edward Snowden team because it's just like, fuck yeah. Like, that's what we were, that's the kind of shit, you know, that, like, movies were made of.
Yes.
Like, that we wanted to happen. We want some guy to be like, yo, you all are getting fucked, and I'm willing to die over this shit and tell you about it, you know.
Yeah, and before Obama was in office, that whole hope and change. Yeah. His website was all about protecting whistleblowers. All that shit was removed once all this stuff started going down with Edward Snowden and with Julian Assange. But before that, he was all about protecting whistleblowers who were exposing illegal activity. Guess what? That's exactly what Snowden did. Everything he did is protecting people who are being exposed to dangerous elements of out-of-control government. I mean, that's really what's going on.
I didn't realize that was on the Obama page. I mean, I never went to the Obama page, but at the same time, like, I never knew that he said that. What a crock of shit.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I mean, they were like, we had to say, hey, Snowden, come back here. We promise we're not going to kill you. Like, when America has to say that, you know what I mean? It's like, fuck, we're fucked. It's like Howard Stern says, man, you know, he's like, we're like the last, you know, we are like people say we shouldn't police the world, but the reality is like 90% of the world are like murdering their own people or like stoning women to death. Like, there's all these other countries, like, there's not many countries that says, hey, fucking stop, right?
Yeah.
That is what we want from America, is what we hope for. But when you look at it and you look at the NSA shit and all that, it's like, you know, it's just hard to get all hyped up and excited about it. I mean, but our world changed so much, man. I was talking to a friend, I'm 35, and I was talking to a friend of mine about this, about how my generation, it was like, our world is so fucked compared to everybody else's, because, I mean, it's probably just getting worse for the other kids, but, you know, we saw, like, when we were 14, Kurt Cobain blew his brains out. So, like, by that time, like, everybody's kind of hopeful. And then when that happens, that's the first time that's ever happened. It was so dark. It was so, like, there was photographs floating around in my high school of it and shit. And I remember kind of being like, man, this is dark. But it kind of, like, threw me. I was really into Nine Inch Nails and Manson and shit like that. And it, like, threw me into that world even more. And, you know, everybody loved the dark. And then fucking 9/11 happens when we're like 20, 21. And it's like, holy fuck. Like, everything changed after that point. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone in this is a lot darker. Everyone is like, realizes that yeah, you know, that might just these massive assaults can happen here. You know, there was always kind of like dreamy, it's, you know, it's America thing. It's like, we always kind of, even though there was a lot of corruption with, like, from Nixon to, like, the you know, the Kennedy assassination and shit, which was kind of the start of, like televised or public, or you know, broadcast in certain ways, newspapers of, like, death, mass death, and weird, crazy shit like that. But you look at, there was always this kind of hopefulness. And I think, like, after 9/11 and after kind of everything that's gone on, like, people are really, like, disillusioned to it. You know, we don't have that same kind of feeling that was going on in the 80s and 90s.
I know what you're saying, like the perception of what America stands for.
Yeah.
It used to be that we were noble
everywhere else. Yeah. You know? Everybody used to say it's the land of the free. Like, you still go to New York and the cab driver guy who's by the way, only driven for 2 weeks because he got here 2 weeks ago, like, he'll still tell you, like, I'm goddamn so happy to be in America. Of course, because you're in New York City and it's beautiful. And there is a beauty to that and what we offer the rest of the world and people that are in these fucking terrible countries and they escape and they come here and it's like that's great. But, like,
yeah, in comparison to the Congo, we're awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. In comparison to the Congo, we are awesome. But at the same time, we're also like, we're like kids that, you know, like, I think the couple generations before us, it was like the parents stayed together and it was like, great. Like, we're the kids. The mom shot the dad and got away with it. And we're like, all right. You know what I mean? Like our vision of America is kind of like, yeah, we really kind of hate our parents, but we're,
I see,
you
what you're saying. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that sounded weird when I said it, but what I mean,
I know what you're saying.
You know,
though.
Like, I just feel like we kind of are this weird, this world that we're in and the three of us and everybody that we know kind of now, it's like we have this this kind of just disdain for things. Like, you look at this fucking Sandy Hook and all these terrible things that are happening, and everyone wants to focus on the gun rights thing when there's, like, mental health issues that need to be dealt with. There's all kinds of stuff, but there have been crazy people forever. There have been murderers forever. It's like, but changing the system and trying to get rid, it just, everything just seems so fucked, you know? Mm-hmm. You, like, you wake up and you just want to watch cartoons. You don't want to, you definitely don't want to watch the news, and you definitely don't
want
to, like,
one of the reasons why things are so fucked in as far as our perceptions is because we're getting more information about the real dealings of our government now than ever before. Yes. Because of guys like Julian Assange and because of guys like Edward Snowden, one of the things that people don't like about it is like, well, you know, they're exposing American secrets. They're putting Americans at risk. Well, maybe what Americans are doing is putting Americans at risk, because what they're doing is exposing truth. Yes. You know, they're exposing things that we don't like. I remember after September 11th, one of the things that I found, like, the most shocking about it all was how many American flags were on people's cars. Like, I would drive to work, and
that was,
like,
crazy. I remember
fucking madness, man. Every car had an American flag on it. It was nuts. My friend Jay London started selling American flags. He was
smart. Probably made a ton, because bank. I mean, it was insane when that happened. You remember? Mm-hmm. It's like exposing secrets. You know, Geraldo exposes secrets and put guys' lives in danger. Not Edward Snowden. That's like telling you. But yeah, but the fucking the flags, man. That was insane. It was like this. There was like a sense of, you know, but who knows if that was real? Like, the, I mean, you know what I mean? It was real. People were buying the flags. The sense of nationalism was real, obviously. But at the same time, like, there was a side of it that it was just like, there was marketing and there was all these things. And there was like the magic trick going on in the right hand while there's shit going over here in the left hand. Mm-hmm. And then you have like the Fahrenheit 9/11 movie, and you're like, well, looking at that, and everybody's looking at, and this loose change, and some people are saying it wasn't a plane that hit the Pentagon, it was a missile, and you got fucking with the wrestler, what's his name, that's got the television,
Jesse Ventura
talking about they got bomb paint. You know, did you ever watch the 9/11 episode of that conspiracy theory?
Yeah, here's the problem with that conspiracy theory. I worked with those very same people when I did that sci-fi show, Joe Rogan Questions Everything.
I loved that show. I thought that was a killer show.
Thanks, man. We still might do it. We're still talking. I just don't want to do it the way we did it, because there's a lot of fuckery involved in those shows.
You
a
lot tell of fuckery. There's like, turn the plane around. Exactly. Alex Jones wants to talk. Yeah. And it's like,
wait a minute. What?
Yeah.
There's just, those shows, they gravitate towards the fantastic and avoid simplicity. Avoid
what would be boring TV, mm-hmm. which is really the juice.
Yeah, well, also avoid like other possible scenarios that aren't as sexy. You know, there's a lot of incompetence involved in government, and sometimes people, they misconstrue conspiracy. They think of it as a conspiracy when it's really just a bunch of idiots that did a shitty job of protecting people, and then, you know, the scramble afterwards. And then people that have capitalized on the scramble and made money. And then people look at the people who capitalized on the event and say, oh, well, this is clear evidence that there was a conspiracy, and these people that were the ones that profited off of it. Maybe not. Maybe there was a fucking horrible event, and some people look at horrible events as an opportunity to make money, and they did. And they didn't have anything to do with it happening, but they did have something to do with profiting off of it.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot of, like, and you people get involved in these conspiracy discussions, and unfortunately what happens is when you start labeling a bunch of shit conspiracies that aren't really conspiracies, you throw the whole thing into a tizzy. Because now no one knows what the fuck to believe. And if I find out that you're wrong about a bunch of ridiculous conspiracy assumptions, if you're wrong about those, what am I supposed to think about all the other shit that you're saying?
Yeah, like, no, you're very right about that.
And that's a real problem with conspiracy theories, is that the people who find them, they're sexy to find. So people go looking for them in fucking everything. And they're not willing to abandon them once they have sort of called them out. Once they've called out a conspiracy theory, they stick with it and they ride that fucker right into the rocks.
Right.
You know? And a lot of these 9/11 guys are like that. There's a lot of these 9/11 guys, there's photos that people have said, look, it's clear that thermite cut this steel and the steel's... Asshole, they cut that steel so they can move it. Like, this is all after the fucking buildings went down.
Yeah.
And you guys are touting this as evidence that thermite was used. They cut the fucking girders so that they can move that shit out of there.
Yeah.
Well, why did they get rid of all that waste and ship it over to China? What do you want him to do? You want him to hang on to it? What do you want him to do? Put it in a pile so that you can go and send your independent investigators that are going to go over and scan for thermite?
Yeah, yeah. Fuck, that's man. Silly. See, now you start talking about that, and the first thing I think about is the biggest one is what happened with Osama bin Laden. Mm-hmm. Oh, we dumped his body over. Right. Remember that whole story?
Yeah.
Everybody talks about that, and it's like people say he was not there. They had nothing to do with it. There was never a situation there. He's been dead for a long time.
Yeah, a lot of people, special ops people, say that he's been dead forever.
Yeah, yeah. They say that he died ages ago, and they just did this.
They pulled that dude out of the freezer and chucked him into the ocean.
Chucked him into the ocean.
We got him. Plop.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Who the fuck knows?
It's but you're right though, man. People will ride that shit down and it's like you end up kind of like
it's just more confusion.
It is. It's like white noise and static, you know, mm-hmm. around all the time. It's almost just as bad as the media is, you know.
Well, it helps them. It helps anyone in government because it also shows that anytime there's any sort of a cataclysmic disaster, anytime there's any sort of an event like a 9/11, there's so much scrambling and there's so much chaos afterwards that it's impossible to get a clear story on what exactly happened.
Yeah, they love that.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like when they're involved in something. That's why Edward Snowden and people like that really terrify him, because they tried to, you know, they planted fake Snowden stories that were like there was a UFO one that they were trying to plant them so he would look like a kook, and they weren't real. Like it would be like an article in mm-hmm. you know, some European magazine saying that Snowden papers say that the government knew about UFOs and has had them for a long time and all this.
UFOs are a perfect one, right? You want to look like a kook?
Perfect one, man. I mean, I've never, it's like, I'm obsessed with all this shit. You know, I'm obsessed with all of it. But the reality is like, I've never seen, I would love to see a ghost. Never seen one. Never fucking seen a fucking ghost. I've never seen a fucking alien. I've never seen any of it. I've tried. I've slept in haunted houses. I've met people that have seen ghosts. Like, anytime somebody tells me a ghost story, the first thing I'm thinking is like, you're fucking crazy. Like, that's the first thing I think, because I've never seen one. Have you ever had an experience with a ghost or anything?
No. I've gone to the Comedy Store really late at night. The Comedy Store in Hollywood.
I've heard about all that. I've heard about all the shit about the killing room they had up there or whatever.
Well, the Comedy Store used to be Ciro's nightclub.
Yes.
And it was owned by Bugsy Siegel.
Yes.
And many people were murdered there. And Ciro's nightclub, you know, this was back in the 1930s, I guess, in the 1940s, like whenever it was, the early 20th century.
Yeah.
And that was a place where Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis would perform. And the Comedy Store's original form was like essentially a mob club. It was a mob-run nightclub. Right. And a lot of people were killed there. There was a tunnel from the back of the Comedy Store main room, the green room and the main room, where you would go and take this tunnel up into a house that was up in the hills. Like, they had it during the illegal bootlegging era.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a lot of wacky shit that happened in that place. And because of that...
I've heard many stories about a person that sits in the audience or something. There's some lady that...
Yeah, I've heard. Mostly bullshit. Mostly bullshit. I was there. I performed at the Comedy Store for 13 years.
Wow.
And I never saw shit.
Yeah.
I looked around. I went there late at night. I would sit in the main room when the lights were out and everyone was gone and just wait for shit to happen.
Wow.
Yeah, nothing happened.
That's
But that doesn't mean that something couldn't be there.
I just want to see some fucking proof, man. I mean, these people write these fucking books and go on these talk shows and say this shit. I'm like, I don't believe a fucking word you're saying. I just can't believe it because I've never seen it, man. I mean,
but imagine if you did and what you saw was a brief but unique moment. And in that brief, unique moment, you saw...
Yeah, right.
And then it's gone. You're like, what the fuck? But you saw it.
Yeah,
there's no way to measure it. There's no way.
I become a kook, I guess.
You may be, right?
Talk shows and be like, and then his face was. I mean, I don't know, man. It's.
I haven't completely ruled it out because so many people have brought out ghosts.
I just want to see some proof. I just want to see something. I mean, it just seems so nuts. Like, I got abducted by aliens and my ass got probed and all this shit. Like, I see these people and you're like. These poor people are so lonely, and they got nothing going on, and they either dream this shit up, or they're taking Ambien, walking around in their front yard asleep, and,
right.
you know, have this thing, or whatever it is. Like, I just don't know. It's like, I want to, man. Me and my dad went to go see Fire in the Sky when I was a kid, when that movie came out. You know, it was just touching into mainstream, all this, like,
right.
alien abduction shit, you know. And I used to watch X-Files every fucking week. I love
I think that Travis Walton guy has been kind of called out as being a bullshit artist, though.
Right? It turned out to there was some kind of thing yeah. there. There was fraud to it. It's like,
yeah.
it always is going to. It's like yeah. that. Have you seen that movie? It was so well done. The movie's okay, but the fourth kind?
Oh, yeah. No, I didn't.
Did you see it? Because it was like, yeah, because they had like this lady who's supposed to be the real lady, and they have her interviews with Mila Jovovich acting right. out the scenes. But it was all fake. Like, right. they set up this whole thing. I mean, you know, Blair Witch was the first to do this kind of shit, mm-hmm. but eventually, like, it's all coming down as fake, I would think.
Well, that's just entertainment, you know. I mean, it's the real problem is when you deal with the people that are involved in the quote-unquote UFO community. Like, I've interviewed a ton of those for that television show, and I sat yeah. down. We had the show, each episode was only an hour long, but in that hour-long episode, I had several hour-plus-long conversations with a lot of different people that were involved in these things. And one thing that you get out of them is that these motherfuckers only have one option. That option in their head is that UFOs are real, even if they haven't seen shit themselves. And what they're not taking into account is how many people are liars. How many, like, I've told this story before. I was in the woods once and I thought I saw a wolf. I thought it was a wolf for about 4 seconds at the most. It was a squirrel. I saw a squirrel. I was like, is that a wolf? Is that a wolf? Squirrel. What the fuck is wrong with me? Like, it was literally like that. Like, I thought it was a wolf. It was a squirrel. And right. it was the woods. And I'm sane. And I'm also, I constantly check myself. I'm very objective like that. I'm always like, what are you doing, dummy? I'm yeah. always like saying that to myself to make sure that. But some people don't ever say, what are you doing, dummy? They say, I know what I saw.
That's like the joke with no punchline thing. You know yeah. what I mean? It's like there's no punchline to get you out of it, so you're stuck in the joke forever. It's like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like the other day, my wife came home, and I was drunk with a knife. And because I had this, our doorbell fell off, right? Our doorbell is like stuck to our front door. It's not like wired in, some kind of little wireless thing. And it had fallen off, so I put it inside the house. And my wife was gone, and she's working, and I was drunk. I was just drinking and hanging out and, like, playing. It was a video game that me and my buddies play and stuff, and I had been drinking, and all of a sudden the doorbell rings. And I'm like, doorbell's inside. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, holy shit.
So you got your knife out?
I get a knife out, you know, because I'm so
like,
drunk.
As if someone's a bad guy, they got to ring the doorbell first before they
yeah.
get you.
Well, yeah, or if they're in the house and ringing the doorbell and letting me know they're in the house, you know? And I'm not like a scaredy cat. Like, I'm always the guy that goes downstairs to check it out. I've got no problem with that. I got no problem walking downstairs. There may be somebody down there, you know, but in this moment, I was like, I'm alone and the doorbell's ringing on the inside of the house and this fucking sucks and I'm hammered. So I'm like, getting the knife out, you know, but like, again, same kind of thing. Like, I think I'll see something, I think I'll hear something, and my mind goes to these places. But at the end of the day, I know it's ridiculous, you know, unless it's a home invasion of tweakers. That's the only thing I'm worried about, the tweaker home invasion, which was rampant here when I first moved into town in the flatlands. But
yeah, tweaker home invasions are real. If tweakers need money bad,
yeah,
they come up with wacky plans, and that's the number one thing that happens to meth heads, is they lose their ability to make good decisions.
Yeah, because it's back after a couple days and shit, you know, you've been out for like 9 days and gotta get more.
Yeah, well, they're also like, they don't see how it's almost like their judgment gets cut off. Like, they can only see, like, a couple of steps forward. They can't see, like, the whole future.
Yeah.
So they see, I know what I'll do. I'll just store all the meth in my ass. Yeah. You know, no one's going to check there. And then they get arrested, and they're pulling meth out of their ass. What? What are you doing back there, man? How'd you find it? Like, how did I find it? Do you know that people store things in their ass? Guys have stored guns in their ass. So there's this one article in GQ about this guy who was a lawyer, and he was representing meth heads. And somewhere, I think it was Vanity Fair, GQ, one of those. And along the way, he started doing meth. And then he started selling meth.
Wow.
And then
it's like Rush, kind
of. Yeah. He had, his basement had, like, buckets of meth. Like, he had, like, made it and, like, was storing it in his basement. And people were like, are you out of your fucking mind? Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was out of his mind.
Dude, that's insane. He was a lawyer representing yep. meth heads who became who Heisenberged. Like,
he went full retard.
Dude, that's so insane. What a great story. And now I got to find that article.
Yeah, I wish it was many years ago. But I remember reading that one of the experts that they were interviewing was talking about your lack of ability to make critical decisions, and that it goes out the window. It's one of the first symptoms of meth use. As people start doing, like, rational people start doing really irrational things and don't seem to understand the consequences of it. It's like they can't, they don't see, you know, you see several steps ahead. Like you say, like, well, you know, if I go outside and light that car on fire, well, if it explodes, and then what if the tree probably catches on fire, and then the building catches on fire, fuck, man, I could start a big fire. Meth heads don't think that. All they think is, I'm going to light that fucking car on fire. Nothing's going to happen, you know?
I know. I've known plenty of people who have gone down that path. And I mean, I've tried this shit before.
You've tried meth?
Yeah.
Because what's it like?
It's just like, it's like really powerful coke. It's like, if you, like, there have been times and places where someone is had that shit. Like, I mean, I'm not like fucking doing blow all day long or anything, but there have been times I've done shows and shit, and there's been around and be like, hey man, want to party? And I'm like, yeah, fuck it, man. Yeah, right. And some guy, you like think the guy's going to chop off some blow or something, right? And then it'll be like, it's meth. But I mean, it's funny to call it meth because it's crank or speed. Like when I first moved here, I was partying a bunch, and there was this guy that had like this yellow dog speed. It was like yellowish powder. It wasn't, and it's the same kind of effect. Like one line of it will keep you up for like 10 hours. Like with coke, you want to do more every hour or every, you know, 30 minutes. And with meth, like you do a line and you're like, boo, like for fucking, you can stay up for like 10 hours, you know, if you want to. And then those guys, like, that's why meth, like, you don't need as much of it, and they'll just do some, or they'll smoke it and do that. And it's, you know, it's like, that's what it is. It's like really, really powerful coke. So, like, I can't stay up all night on coke, and I have stayed up all night one time on meth. Just one line of it, of just being up, all, and you just, like, play the guitar, and you're, like, singing, and you're just so into singing, you know? But, all, like, in the Southeast, where we play a lot, it's so big down there. I mean,
right.
I mean, every, like, my buddies that live in Kentucky and stuff, like, it's everywhere, and their buddies all do it, and they'll, you know, fall, they'll do it, sometimes they'll do it occasionally, and then one of the guys will start doing it too much, and he'll fucking, like, he, you know, there's some tons of sad stories, guys with kids and shit that are just doing it and staying up for 8 or 9 days, and the kids have no idea, and they're fucking just wired and get, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just insane. It's not, it burns like a motherfucker too when you do it. Like if you do a line of it, it like burns your nose like insane. You know?
Really? Like burns the inside of your nose?
Yeah. I mean, but it's kind of awesome, the burn. The burn is kind of the addictive thing, because it's like, God! And then you're like
eating jalapenos.
Yeah, it's like snorting jalapenos.
So, how many times have you done meth?
It's probably going to sound like a lot. Five.
Five. That doesn't sound like a lot. The worry that people have is that you do it once and that you're gone.
No, it's not like heroin in that way. I've never done heroin, but I know people have done heroin. I know it's like there's that immediate like euphoria thing. And with meth, the reason why it's so cheap, it's so much more potent, and I think that's why it's such a big, and it's like it's such a big deal. You know, it's easy to make with weird shit and Drano and all this fucking shit in it, and then and Sudafed and all that, you know. I mean, they got to in the South where they had to move Sudafed behind the counter because people were coming in and buying like 6-7 packs of Sudafed. And then,
well, if you buy it out here, you have to give you your driver's license.
Started in the South where they were like real fast. But I mean, you know, I mean, there's probably been times I may have done it like where I thought I was doing something else, and then I'm like, oh, that's definitely crank. You know what I mean? But it's like my brothers and sisters and cousins, I mean, they probably hate me for saying this, but I mean, where they come from, that's common. It's common that people have done crank or do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like weird. It's definitely not addictive. Like, I mean, if you're the type of person who's never done cocaine and you do cocaine and all of a sudden you're like, fuck, I gotta do more cocaine all the fucking time. Like, I know certain people that are into coke like that, but I could never do that. Like, if I do have done coke, I can't do it for another couple of days. I'm not the guy who stays up all night and does the whole bag and does all, I'll do like, you know, bump or something like that. But it's been a long time since I've done it. But if I did do it, I would just do small amounts of it, you know, here or there. But there are people that if you have that personality where you're going to be the guy who he locks himself in a hotel room for 3 days and does blow and doesn't show up for your job and all that shit, because you got a bag of blow at a party, you know, then you're going to have a problem with crank. But I think it's the same kind of thing, though. It's just hardcore, man. It's not my style. Like, certain people prefer crank to coke. And I would like, or, you know, some people prefer Adderall and do all that. And it's kind of like, I mean, none of it excites me that much, but I would definitely, anything that lasts a really long time, I can't do. I got kids and shit. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm in a party, weed is like right down my alley. I love weed. I can fucking do it in the studio. I do it at night after my kids are asleep to go to bed. Like, it's never going to fuck you up so much you can't snap out of it and fucking make a good decision.
I mean, right.
There's times, you know, you can like, man, I shouldn't have fucking ate that old pizza. But, you know, but it's not like, you know, I went and robbed my mom's house and I woke up 2 days later in a ditch. And I'm like, fuck, I probably shouldn't have done that crank.
Yeah, it's those speedy ones. They accelerate you and they cut out a lot of the decision-making process.
Yeah, they definitely do. They definitely, I mean, just there's no two ways about it. After you've been up an entire day, you just start fucking, I mean, you start seeing stuff. Like, I've done that without drugs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've stayed up days on, and you just start getting delirious. And like, when you're using something that's fueling your heart rate and keeping you, your brain is still acting as if you are not on the drugs and you've been up for 5 days and you're seeing shit, but yet you're just wired from that shit. That's what, like, they do the home invasion thing. Like, there was a, I used to live on, I've lived all over this town, but Santa Monica and Gardner, there's an Astroburger right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I lived right there behind the Fatburger. And there was a house there that notoriously had been, like, tweakers, like, kicked the door down and came in and were just fucking, like, tied the whole family up and shit and robbed them with their money. Because that's all they want, is they want money to buy more crank.
Right.
That's essentially the deal. But they end up fucking killing people and all kinds of shit over it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, they think, well, we're going to get caught. Kill these people. Fuck it. We'll never get caught that way.
Yeah,
you know, they just don't. They're not seeing a bunch of steps ahead.
Yeah, for sure.
People are terrified of crank. They're terrified of meth. They're terrified of anything that makes people maniacs. You know, that's the big fear.
Yeah, the bath salts craze. That guy who like chewed the dude's face off, and then it turns out he wasn't on bath salts. Like,
well, he was. Here's the thing. They say, oh, all they found in his system was marijuana. The real problem is they don't have tests for bath salts.
You
so see, when they say,
that's a huge issue in Kentucky, my friend, because see, crank is now getting to where it's like too expensive, and the coal miners. The tests for amphetamines show up in their system, and so the coal miners want it, and that's why that bath salts thing started, because from what I heard, one of the regions, I guess, was that the coal miners were doing that, and it wouldn't show up on the tests. They'd fucking, you know, smoke or snort a bunch of that shit and go down in the fucking coal mines and fucking work for like 3 days straight.
It makes sense. What they do apparently is they take a drug, whether it's meth or something along those lines, and then they alter it slightly.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't show up in a test, but it still has some pretty significant response in the human body. And then they sell it as not for human consumption. Bath salts. Like, I didn't understand it. I thought it was just like people had figured out that bath salts make you high when you do them. Like, there's something weird about the bath salts, you snort. But no, they're selling them as bath salts because that's the way you could sell it.
Yeah, there's fake pot too that they sell as like something like that. And I tried
super
smoking
bad
that
for
one
you.
Time and it was just terrible. It was like just gave me a headache instantly, you know. You could have smoked a cookie and probably done less damage. You know? I have to say, like, I'm a foodie too and all this, and I just, while we're on this, I don't know why it popped in my head, but there was a tweet you sent out that I saved the photograph, and I look at it, is that when you had, like, 7 eggs, and it was, like, clearly a little butter in the pan, too, and I cooked, too, and I was, like, I was looking at this fucking thing, and I was, like, God, I could eat that all day and all night, but the fact that you had that photograph of the 7 eggs, I have it in my phone right now.
Well, that's, I have 24 chickens.
Really?
Yeah.
So these
are all fresh eggs that I get from my yard.
Man.
Yeah, it's so great when you can get them. No worries, man. And it's like the eggs are, you know, I'm getting them like the day they come out. They come out of the chicken, boom, I'm frying them. And it's a dark, like an orange yolk. So dear, like if I go to a restaurant, a diner, and I order some eggs, and you look at the yolk, you're like, what did you guys feed your chickens? Like, paper?
Man.
Like, there's nothing in this yolk.
I think I have the fucking photograph.
You saved the photo of my eggs.
I did. I know I saved it. It's in here somewhere.
Well, I've been eating nothing but farm fresh eggs, like, or yard
That's so
fresh
awesome.
Eggs for the past year. My goal is by the end of this year, to have all the meat in my house be wild game that I've killed, and all our eggs be the chickens.
Do you go hunting a lot?
Yeah.
It's funny, I've never been hunting.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a computer nerd, like was as a kid. Like my dad, we went out shooting one time. I did quail hunting with my buddy when I was a kid. I mean, you know, they go out in the field and everybody's shooting at the fucking birds and shit. But I've never even been hunting. I mean, I've just never been it's never been my thing. Like I like guns. I've gone shooting guns and things like that. But I've just never really done it.
Would you be into doing it?
I mean, I can tell you, like, there are people around and be like, I can never fucking blow a deer's brains out or whatever. But I mean, I would go with you. I would definitely go. I'm not opposed to going hunting.
So you would go, but you wouldn't pull the trigger?
I don't know if I would pull the trigger. I've never done it. I've never killed an animal with a gun.
Have you ever had venison?
Oh, I love it. Yeah. I love
it. Killing deer. You got to kill
them. No, I know. I know that. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? But there are certain people that are like, I mean, my wife would never kill, you know, or never go hunting. Or like, I have lots of friends that probably be like, I don't know if I could do it. I would go, got no problem with it. I think that there's so many good things that come from hunting. Like, whether it be, and I love that when people say that they hunt their own meat and eat it and all that. I'm just saying I've never done it. I mean, people think that I'm like a Harley riding, like they think I'm tall, first of all. And second of all, they think that I'm like into hunting and like all this redneck shit. And I'm a computer geek that moved to LA when I was 20. You know what I mean? That's
it. But you sing country music. Your dad is one of the great country music icons of all time.
I know. But he didn't really hunt or do anything like that either. He had a gun collection of like Civil War era guns and stuff. And
oh, wow.
He's into that kind of stuff. Very into history and stuff, which I was real. He, in his own way, he was kind of nerdy. A guy from being from Texas and being who he was, you know. But he was just kind of into history and things like that. But we went hunting with Hank Jr. one time, and neither one of us hit nothing. Like, we would go fishing every once in a while. Tony Joe White is a great artist who used to take us fishing. My dad said he had a curse, like he could never catch anything. And I went fishing with Johnny Cash one time, too.
Wow.
Which is kind of funny. But I was a kid, and we didn't
catch
anything.
You went fishing with Johnny Cash. Holy shit.
And Johnny had, like, a bunch of fish that he'd already caught, and he had them rigged somewhere so he was going to try and make it where my dad would actually think he caught something because he could never go. Like, we weren't real outdoorsy people. Let's just say it that way. Like, I watched way more horror movies with my dad. Like, he used to wake me up in the middle of the night and say, there's a scary movie on TV. And I go downstairs. I was like 6 or 7. I go downstairs and proceed to like get petrified by some horrible movie that a 6-year-old shouldn't watch. You know?
That's hilarious.
So that was kind of more our activity. Listen to music and watch movies.
It's funny, isn't it, that country music is inexorably connected to like hunting and fishing?
Yeah, well, I mean, naturally, I guess, you know, because country. Of the era and the, like, you know, if you go back a little bit, I mean, not very far from my dad's generation, I mean, him growing up and all of the Grand Ole Opry and all that hit. I mean, all those guys were into that. They all lived in the woods, like the Nashville, and let's not even say Nashville, like even all of the Southeast was far, far more undeveloped. So like back then it was really country folks, and they were in like country music. They would roll their windows up when they listened to it because it was frowned upon. It was like a poor people's music, you know? So a lot of the people in the South and stuff, it's inevitably tied into that, of course. But I mean, you know, it's funny because now it's like someone, if they're critical of, like, I don't represent myself pretending to be like anything I'm not, but if someone was ever critical of the fact that I live in LA and I'm not like a country boy and I play like country style music, it's like, do you guys really think that, you know, Jason Aldean and these new country guys that are so big, like, you really think those guys' daily existence is like tailgate parties and hunting and things like that? You guys are fucking retarded because they're shopping for shoes on Melrose. That's what's happening. Getting caught cheating at the Cabo Cantina. Do you know what I'm saying?
Shopping for shoes on Melrose. I don't know, man. These make me look country.
Man, these jeans are perfectly pre-torn.
Yeah, right? Perfectly pre-torn is the worst. God, it's so fucking stupid. There's nothing stupider than wearing jeans that already have holes in them built in. It's so dumb.
Yeah, of course it's so dumb.
But it's something that everybody wants. They want to, like, already be worn in, you know? they want to pretend that, like, I've had these jeans for a decade.
That they've been you know, really wearing it out for a
while. Yeah, but they don't even look remotely like uniformly worn. Like when people have those jeans that have holes in the knees, like it's obvious you didn't get those holes working.
Yeah.
Like all the rest of the jeans perfect. You just got stupid like what a weird thing to become a style.
Yeah.
Like, holes in your clothes is a style.
Yeah, I know. It's like, see, my jeans, like, I'm the worst. Like, I don't wash my jeans. Like, I wear them for months. And, like, they literally get holes worn in them, like, because of that. Like, I'll get them in the knees sometimes. I walk on the back of them, so, like, the backs of them are, like, ripped.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And so, like, I eventually get holes in them because they're just old and shitty, but... It's so funny, man. It's like there's like all these weird styles right now that are just like, what is happening? Like those that Affliction kind of thing that was going on. Like all those Nashville guys were wearing that.
Yeah,
like all the tribally looking shit. All
yeah,
shit,
and like, skulls and
yeah, but not like cool looking shirts like your shirt. Like you know,
that's a monkey.
Either well, it's
that's a chimp with cool a mushroom monkey. In his mouth. That's my own line, actually. That's the
really
yeah, higherprimate.com. This is all. This shirt is based on Terrence McKenna's stoned ape theory.
That
lower hominids ate mushrooms, and then they had this ideal of nuclear power and spirituality.
Really?
And all that. Yeah, that's what the shirt represents.
Interesting.
Yeah, McKenna had this bizarre idea. It's an interesting idea that his brother Dennis McKenna, who's still alive, is a fascinating guy himself, actually substantiated with science in a way that's way better than I ever could. If you want to listen to the first podcast that I did with Dennis McKenna, and he explains the actual effect that psilocybin has on the mind and really? why it would facilitate the construction of language. And that what McKenna's theory was that what happened to lower primates is that somewhere around, you know, a million plus whatever years ago, when over a period of 2 million years, the size of the human brain doubled. And that's like a very substantial event in biology. And they really have no idea what caused human beings to become so much more intelligent than they were previous. And his theory is that this is at the same time that these tropical rainforests receded into grasslands. Climate change forced these tropical rainforests to become grasslands. And these monkeys climbed down off trees and started experimenting with various food sources, different things. And one of the things they do is they start flipping over cow patties. And they'd find bugs and worms and shit to eat underneath them. But there was also things growing on the cow patties. And those things were psilocybin mushrooms.
Not cows in the jungle, though. This is like they've dropped and they've gone. Okay.
They had seceded into grasslands. Over the climate had changed.
Right, right.
And rainforests had become grasslands.
Fascinating.
And so
the monkeys ate mushrooms.
Exactly.
And then got smarter.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of different reasons why, besides the facilitation of language, which is the very specific reaction that psilocybin has on the human mind, and why Dennis McKenna described it very well. I can't really repeat what he said. I'm not smart enough. I don't remember it either. But what McKenna also said was that psilocybin in low doses increases visual acuity. It sharpens edges. It makes you be able to see things better. It makes you hornier. So it would make you see better and make you hornier. So it would make you, if you see better, you'd probably be more aware of things. You'd probably be a better hunter. If you're hornier, you'd fuck more. So the mushroom-eating monkeys would have a biological advantage over the non-mushroom-eating monkeys.
Well, you do know if a bunch of monkeys are walking around and one of them eats mushrooms, and all of a sudden he's like, you know, yeah. They're going to be like, dudes, you guys got to try this shit.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like out of all the things that make sense as far as looking at the effect of a substance, the effects that a substance has on the body, what would cause massive consumption of the substance over a long period of time, like 2 million years, what would cause direct changes to the human body? What would cause direct changes to the actual function of the mind? Psilocybin's like number one. It's so common. It's everywhere. It grows out of cow shit. It's totally edible. You're hungry. You can eat it. You eat it, you trip balls. You trip balls, you think about things. You develop language. You develop
Have you done DMT?
Oh, yeah.
I've never done it, and I'm dying to try it. Do you know who Sturgill Simpson is?
No.
You should check out his record. There's a record. It's new. And he has a song called Turtles All the Way Down.
I've heard about this. Yeah, it's about DMT, right?
Well, he apparently he did a bunch of DMT when he was doing the record, and was just like, yeah, there's this, that song itself talks about DMT and psilocybin and stuff in it, but it's like real old school country. It's
that tattoo's cool. A DMT molecule.
Really? Yeah. I didn't know this about you. See, yeah. Now, I've never experienced it, and I'm so into all that too.
We can make that happen.
Let's get together and do DMT.
Shh. Don't say it on the radio.
Okay, I won't. On the internet. I promised I won't bring any crank.
Well, DMT is one of the weirdest ones too, because you could never be tested for it. I mean, really? They would have to catch
you.
I've never had
that kind of an experience with anything. I've done mushrooms before, and I laughed a lot. I've done acid. I didn't really see anything, but I'm very fascinated with like the peyote kind of experience and all that. And I've never had it. Sturgill's like, you gotta try it, dude. He's like,
DMT is mushrooms times a million plus aliens. That's
what it is. What's the deal with the aliens with DMT?
Well, there's something that happens when you take DMT where you pass through visually or spiritually, whether it's real
like dimensions.
You pass through into some new space. And when you're in some new space, what's weird about DMT
is this all in your head with your eyes shut?
Your eyes are shut. But if you open your eyes, you're gonna see some crazy shit too. You'll see some crazy shit, though, that's also... You're better off keeping your eyes closed, though, because then you'll get sort of a full representation of what's going on and what you're seeing. When your eyes are open, your eyes are taking in the physical world, like what you're seeing in front of you, and you're trying to combine the two of them, and it's very baffling and confusing.
So it's better to just shut your eyes.
Silent darkness. Close your eyes, take it, and then just close your eyes and lay back, and you go on the craziest trip. It's impossible for anything to be stronger. It's impossible for anything to be a more potent hallucination, because it seems more real than reality itself. Like once you do DMT, the weirdest thing about it is coming back, like regular reality is so dry and dull. It's like that's more real. Like it's more, you feel it. You also feel, if this makes any sense, you feel the experience in your essence, in your essence as a human
being.
And
it sticks with you after.
Fuck, man. I've had trips that stuck with me for 5 or 6 years where every day I would think about that trip for 5 or 6 years.
Wow, man. I'm very fascinated by this, man.
Well, it's the very components of the brain itself. The very human neurotransmitters that power thinking. That work inside your mind. I mean, these are endogenous chemicals. These aren't like, it's not like something that's alien to the human body that you put in and it has this crazy effect. No, DMT is actually produced by your body itself. So when you add it, when you take it and smoke it, like your body already knows what it is. That's one of the reasons why it's so transient. Like it's, when you take it, you have this extreme high, you have this wild ride of hallucinations and experiences or whatever it is.
And how long does it last?
That's the crazy thing. 15 minutes max.
Wow. I did more salvia if you do one it, time, which kind of like a short thing, but that was nothing.
More if you do it intravenously. If you do it intravenously, it can last like a half hour or more.
Really?
Yeah, like Rick Strassman, who was the guy who... he was one of the first guys to get federal... He got federal permission, the DEA's permission to do these research studies on dimethyltryptamine intravenously in patients. He did it at the University of New Mexico, and they did several of these, and then he wrote a book on it called DMT, the Spirit Molecule, where these people had these incredible, incredible experiences while on this intravenous dimethyltryptamine, and repeatable experiences. They would go to these and very, very, very much mirrored the alien abduction experiences that people talk about, like being taken aboard alien spacecrafts and being brought to alien places and alien lands, like very, very similar.
Reptiles.
Yeah, so he started connecting dimethyltryptamine and endogenous dumps of dimethyltryptamine to alien abduction experiences, and that's what he thinks that's all about. He thinks all of these people that have these, like, I woke up in the middle of the night, I was on a spaceship, your brain just dumped a bunch of DMT in, and somehow or another you got caught in the middle of this world of being awake and dreaming. So your body, when you're dreaming, is essentially producing something that's causing you to hallucinate. The speculation is that that's DMT as well. They haven't totally proven that yet, but they're pretty sure. They've already proven that DMT is produced by the pineal gland. That was speculation, but they've proven that in live rats, the live rats actually produce DMT in that gland. So that's
really,
yeah. It's all pretty trippy shit.
That is very fascinating. I mean, like I said, I honestly haven't I've just never done it. I'm just into that, man. I'm into that experience. I'm into that, like, going to the next level. Oh, sweet.
Yeah, well, this is one of the, it's one of the weirdest ones because it's in so many different plants. It's not like you have to go and get a pomegranate from Brazil and that's the only way you get this.
What's the
ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca is essentially the way they figured it out.
And all that shit. Like,
yeah, like the movie, yeah. Well, what ayahuasca is an orally active form of DMT. So because DMT, when you smoke it, it goes directly into your blood supply. But DMT is in so many different plants that if you got it from eating it, you would be tripping your balls out every time you have a salad.
Yeah.
Because grass has it in it. A lot of different, thousands of different plants have it in it.
Wow.
So because of that, your body produces chemicals that mitigate that. And one of them is called monoamine oxidase. And monoamine oxidase is produced in your gut. So when the Amazon shamans figure out how to give people DMT with a, say, a modern, like in today, in, you know, United States and modern chemical world, there's scientists that have figured out how to synthesize pure DMT. So they take it from plants or, you know, from various chemicals and they synthesize pure DMT. You smoke it, it goes right in your bloodstream. It's pure DMT. But you can't do that in the Amazon. So right. What they figured out how to do is make an orally active version of it.
Right.
So what it is they combine the leaves of one plant with the roots of another, and one of them being harmine, which is a natural MAO inhibitor. So it's a monoamine oxidase inhibitor that they mix in.
Wow.
So it's like a DMT trip, but it's not quite as intense. It's a slow release, longer version that's very hallucinogenic and very spiritual in a lot of ways, but I've only done the big one. The big one is the smoking DMT is you get shot through a cannon to the center of the fucking universe. The way I describe it is you're communicating with complex geometric patterns that are made out of love and understanding.
Man, that's so funny because I've heard that. I've heard the geometrics thing and you know, I'm a big studier of like sacred geometry mm-hmm. and all these kind of things. I'm very fascinated by this. I'm very fascinated.
Oh, I'm so fascinated by geometry. Sacred geometry and fractals and all those different when you look at just the nature of the universe itself, just the nature of cellular life, subatomic particles, atoms becoming individuals being a part of a group of individuals that live on a planet, the planet being a part of the galaxy being a part of the universe, on and on and on and on and on. Like it seems like there's a fractal geometric nature to life itself. The Fibonacci sequence that describes like the way sunflower seeds are developed, the way a nautilus shell looks, the way so many different plants grow. There's all this weird sort of fractal mathematical nature to
numbers
the world itself.
Like the tree of life and the mm-hmm. 33, you know, it's just, there's so many things like that I'm so fascinated with that I feel like when you unlock those kind of things in your mind and you're into that stuff, like there's a great book called Gateway to the Gods that I read. I don't know how I ran across this book, but it's about this guy. It's about a lot of sacred geometry. It talks about it really deals with the in the Bible, like the Watchers and the Nephilim and the concept that angels that were actually like interdimensional travel, and it touches a little bit on the DMT-ish kind of thing, and it touches on some of that kind of travel, mind travel. But I'm very fascinated by it, man. I think if your mind is open to it and you do something like DMT, it probably enhances your, if you're like you being so knowledgeable on so much of this, probably has enhanced your trip when you do it, because are you able to focus on what you're looking at or whatever you're seeing?
So hard. It's so crazy and it changes every second. Like every second you look at it, it becomes something even more impossible. That's the weirdest thing about it. It's just, you can't believe you're seeing something that's like this. Like, how is this possible?
Aren't there beings that more than one person have seen?
Yes.
And they're all they all describe them as the same.
See, it's
Did
hard.
Did you do that? Did
I've
you see?
Seen, see, my trips have been different every time I've done it. That's one of the weirdest things about it is, like someone saying that they've seen the same things that I've seen. I'm not even sure I could tell you what I saw. Like, I can tell you what I can remember about what I saw, but one of the weirdest aspects of it is that it's impossible. Like, when you're seeing it, like, this isn't real. This can't be possible that I can actually see this. And then, like, one of the things that one of my trips, one of the most profound ones, it was like these, like, almost like children that were in this dimension. Children that were, like, infinitely more intelligent than me, but behaved like children and communicated like children. And they would say, I love you 600,500,000 times. Like, something like a kid would say. Like, I love you infinity. I love you 50,700,000. Like, you know, like that kind of shit. They would say that, and then they would go, look at this. And they kept saying, look at this. And every time they would say, look at this, they would show you something that was so impossibly beautiful. Like, tears were, like, flowing down my face. Because I was conscious. I had my eyes closed, and I was seeing this, and I was conscious, but I was crying because it was so beautiful. And then they would say it again. I love you 600,500,000 times. Look at this. And then they would show you something even more insane, like a million times more insane than what you just saw.
What were they showing you?
Didn't make any sense. It was just, you can't describe it. It's just the fractal nature of the universe embodied in imagery, which also had meaning and love connected to it. So when you were seeing it, you weren't just seeing something beautiful, but you were feeling it. And it was like almost like it was running through your soul, like it was cleansing you as you saw it. Like, everything that I saw made me, every time I saw it, every new thing made me love people more, made me love life more, made me more appreciative, made me want to hug more. And then I thought that was over, and then would go, look at this. And then you'd get hit with a new wave. And it was just overwhelming. I'm just crying. Like, I couldn't hold it in. It was just so unbelievably intense.
Have you ever had a negative experience?
No, not on DMT, no. I've had negative experiences in that DMT has sort of exposed that I was maybe a little out of control in my life, like maybe too stressed out, or maybe taking too much time, devoted too much time to work and bullshit related things. It really didn't matter in the long, like the negative aspect was, it like after it was over, it was like, hey, I need to just fucking chill out. Like, I need to just smell the daisies. I need to just enjoy this experience, you know, and just not
15 minutes, huh?
Yeah, but I've never had a negative experience in that, like, while I was in it. I was like, this is negative. But I've seen it. I've seen people freak out.
You have? Have you been with someone that freaked out?
Yeah, my friend Eddie freaked the fuck out the first time he did it. But I think it was because he was trying to control it. You can't control it.
You can't.
You can't, like, say, I'm going to pull myself out of this and sober up. Good luck. You have to give in. You have to be willing to give in.
But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, man, it's like, I think you and I are a lot alike in that way, that it's like I want something more out of this experience. Like, I love life. Like, I'm a positive guy. I've got two kids who I love. I love the time with them, you know, everything like that. And that's why it's like, I'm so fascinated with, like, I don't believe all the bullshit on the media, and I don't believe all the fucking, you know, all the shit that we've been talking about this whole show. Like, that's why I'm into the Bitcoin thing, which we haven't even gotten into. And I mine those things. I'm into the technology of it.
You're mining them, huh?
I mine them. Yeah, I do. I mean, I'm just into the technology of it. I'm into the programming side of it, and the cryptology and all that. But I am into understanding the full aspect of life while I'm here. And it's like, I'm fascinated by religions. And I was raised Christian. My mom's that way. Like, I you know, it's hard for me to say that I'm not a church going kind of guy, but it's like, I believe when you're here, you're supposed to be, if you can leave being good, you know, I haven't been a good guy, that's the thing. But I'm into the knowledge. I'm into the, like, discovering where things come from, and, you know, studying, like, the Egyptians, and studying the fucking artwork that they're all these, you know, I'm just into it. So that's why, like, something like DMT, if I could travel to other dimensions and party with reptiles, I would do it right now.
You can. Yeah. Well, you can with DMT. I don't know about reptiles. Yeah. I've never seen a reptile while on it, but so I've seen things that are somehow or another consciousness, or appear to be conscious, or are representations of your own consciousness in some sort of a much purer, much greater form. But you know who else wasn't a church-going person? Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus didn't have a fucking church. Yeah,
that's
true. Churches are human creations. And humans, the problem with any sort of power structure, any top-down power structure is that people want to contain that once they have power, they want to retain that power. They want to contain the people, to contain the ideologies of the people that are involved in that group, and then you know to have an open-minded, completely open situation where you have a group, but there's no structure to it, and everyone's just loving and able to do whatever they want. There's no one person that's the leader. No, that's not what we do. Human beings, everything sort of falls into that weird alpha male monkey category where there's one person that talks and everyone else listens. And that's what you find in churches. That's what you find at political rallies. That's what you find when the president gives a speech on television. There's the one and then there's the listeners. And it's not a dialogue. It's one person talks and there's a, you know, everyone comes in and sits down, open up to page 324. We're going to read from the gospel. And then this is one person that's doing this. It's one person that's guiding this whole thing. And that's sort of contrary to the very like nature of like a cooperative and open group of humans, a community.
Yeah.
And that's also the best way to control people, to ensure that this one person disseminates the rules, this one person gets to talk, and this one person keeps everybody under control. Oh, the preacher's here. Everyone, all rise. The honorable judge is here. You know, court itself. You have to stand up when this asshole who's wearing robes. Like, why are you wearing robes, man? You can't give the law out with a t-shirt and jeans on.
Yeah.
You have to wear like special fancy clothes in order to understand the law.
Back in the
day. The powdered wigs.
The powdered wigs.
Crazy curly white wigs. You know, just people are mad. They're mad. And they're also running on momentum of an ignorant past, running on the momentum essentially of people that used to write shit down on animal skins. That same momentum is still propelling society today.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. And it's, yeah, you're right. You're right. It's, I mean, we could get into that forever because I've, you know, just conceptually the way that the control is, you know, doled out. It's pretty, I mean, it's pretty easy. It's pretty mathematical. 1 + 1 = 2. Like you just, like I was saying, you keep everybody poor, keep everybody uneducated, and then convince them that if they don't do what we want them to do, they're going to burn in hell.
Yeah. Even better than poor. Now they have a new thing. It's called being in debt.
Yeah.
Everyone's in debt. It's way better than poor. Because poor, you can just deal with being poor. But debt, you're never going to have – you can't stop working. You owe money. You're not even.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly it, man. It's like, you know, separate the family. Have you – you ever get into Bright Eyes, that band?
Bright Eyes? No.
Conor Oberst, have you ever heard of him?
No.
You know who that is? Those guys, they have a great record called The People's Key. But the opening thing is this guy, I don't even know who it is, he's talking about exactly what we're talking about and how they control the masses and stuff, man. That's a great speech in the beginning of this thing. But you know, it's like keeping the mom and dad separate because they both have to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you make it so hard for a normal, like lower income family to even be together so that you can disseminate information to each one of them exactly like you want it, and they don't have a lot of time together. You know, that's a big part of it, and it's so insane. It just is insane. It's just like the wages and the way they control that and the people who make the money. It's like the banking thing. This is why the Bitcoin thing is so brilliant. I mean, you know, I mean, you talked to Andreas, who's like the man, but
Andreas Antonopoulos, who we were talking about this before the podcast, left that Bitcoin.
The Bitcoin community. Foundation.
Yeah. We need to have him on again, find out what that was all about.
The foundation has never been needed. This is what's weird about it because the Bitcoin itself is the protocol. So it's like, that's what's brilliant. The foundation was created as something that was supposed to kind of drive the development of it, but it's become a corporation essentially. You know, and it's had a lot of negative, but the people who are in charge of it now are even more so. People are like, they're kind of crooks and shady, but there's really no need for it. There's no need. There's not like there's a Bitcoin company that people work for. You know, the thing is, it's like more like a virus that was set into the world, and then just like the internet was. You know, there's not like an internet company that they're the president of the internet who can decide like that today, but you know what I mean?
Well, that's the beautiful thing about the internet, isn't it?
It is amazing. But that's why they're trying to do this net neutrality thing is such a big issue because they're trying to can't like right now, Time Warner Cable can already, like if they don't like the Joe Rogan show, they can slow down when people go to your site they can slow it down on purpose.
Right.
But that's shitty enough already. But like with the net neutrality thing, they're trying to get rid of. Then Time Warner can say, hey, Google, your shit's going to be real slow unless you pay us money.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're going to start extorting money out of, to go back into their own pocket to actually to alter what sites and even blocking sites.
Mm-hmm.
And when Time Warner owns all the internet, I mean, there's a giant portion of the internet. I mean, I don't know what the actual numbers are, but it's over 50% of the service provider. And the service provider can then charge companies and decide what people can see. Then that's like the internet is the purpose of it is you're getting fucked big time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're trying to corporatize it. They're trying to control it the same way they've controlled the airwaves. As far as like
in fucking CBS. Egypt, and they cut the internet, you know, and shit like that. That's what we're like three steps away from happening. And that's the internet is decentralized. There is no one in charge of it, and they know that. You know, and the reality is like, if Time Warner becomes that big of a deal, somebody will come out there and run their own wires and fucking set up their own fucking statewide Wi-Fi, and it'll be fine. You know, but it's just tough, man. But you know that, like, did you ever get into discussion about Bitcoin about how you can if I send you money, you can attach a message to it, or you can actually like attach a deed, or I could write a song and it would be in the blockchain copyrighted, but you can actually embed a message in the transaction, and that the first transaction ever done by the guy who made it had either Washington Post or like Wall Street Journal. The headline was like, the government approves second bailout for banks. Like that was encoded in the first transmission. Cause it was like, they're saying like enough, like this shit is so fucked. The banking, the Federal Reserve, the government, everything, like we've got a solution where you don't need a banks anymore. You know what I mean? It changes escrow. It changes everything. Like
you don't need banks if you have digital currency. I mean,
third party is the mining community. So like there's no way to rig it, you know?
Yeah. I think that if it can continue and it can grow and evolve, I think it could be
definitely will.
I think it will as well. I think there's definitely powers that are trying to subvert it.
Of course, man. Of course, because can you imagine? But here's the reality, man. Banks are record stores and are big record companies, and Bitcoin is Napster. That's it. That's what it is. With the Tower Records, man, I used to fucking go there all the fucking time. It's not there anymore.
It's true.
And all these fucking city national banks on every corner, that's going to happen. Mark my words, they will not be there anymore. That would be the same fate as Tower, because people will figure out how to send their money around, you know?
Yeah, and once you get used to buying things with your phone, which is probably the future.
I do it all. I bought a fucking computer. Like, I'm such a nerd that I bought an old 486 PC with like a disk drive in it because I just wanted to play my old games that I liked. I bought one on my phone on the way in here.
Wow.
You know what I mean? On eBay though. But like that's PayPal and you're like paying all kinds of money for that. But like if, you know, I can go on right now, I could go to anywhere and I mean, right now, like with Dell, like start accepting Bitcoin. Like I bought my manager a computer, like with some Bitcoin that I had, and it was fucking cheap. And it was like I sent
Dell accepts it now.
Dell started accepting it just recently.
Wow. And,
you know, Overstock.com was the first one, and now Wikipedia takes it for donations, and it's slowly becoming adopted. And I think it's, you know, back in 94, 93, when the internet was out, people were like, no one's ever going to do this www.somethingorother.com. They're going to have to come up with some easier way to do it. No one's going to ever, this will never become normal. And, you know, it's like here we are 20 years later, and it's like there's no way that anyone could function, any of our devices could function without the internet being involved. Everyone would prefer to go to a website than call a number.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people download their music. They don't buy it really. I mean, they do, but you know what I mean? It's like, so I think that all the talk around Bitcoin right now is the same kind of talk they were having around the internet then.
But I
think it'll be, I mean, there's like messaging programs where you can send money in the text, like on an iPhone. So like if I was like, hey, can you go pick up this? And, you know, here's $40 worth of it or whatever, or, you know, whatever it costs, I can just send it to you instantly and not being
charged. You could like say if, you know, say if we were living together and you wanted me to go pick up a steak.
Yeah.
You go, hey, man, you go to the grocery store and go get some food, and here's the money.
Yeah, just like that. I mean, there'd be no, there's like a couple cents maybe a charge for the transaction fee, but there's, I mean, such an, if there is one, it's such a small amount, and that money goes to, it's like a 401k plan for the mining system, because it's going to eventually hit the mark where it can't make any more, can't generate any more Bitcoin, and then after that, they'll be living off the transaction fees. But, it's kind of interesting. See, like the mining thing, man, it's like some people think of it and they're like, oh, it's like people who want to just like make free money, which is not, it's not the way it works. It's like what it actually is, and this is the nerd part of me. Like I also run a full node of Bitcoin at home, which means like I'm part of the network of transactions that happen. It's kind of complicated, but at the same time, like the technology behind the whole transaction confirming process, which is the AKA the mining, is what is so fascinating to me. And I like, I mean, I'll go on the internet and on IRC and hang out and talk to the developers and shit. Cause I think that someone has to, and is going to use this technology in the way that Bitcoin is and make finally a decentralized entertainment distribution platform, because eventually, like, iTunes takes 30%. Like, they've been good to me in different moments, but here's the reality. You make something that costs nothing to duplicate because it's digital, and they're taking 30% of it. Plus, a company like TuneCore, like, jabs you and robs you to get to even get your shit on iTunes if you're just a new band, you know, who's like, how do I get my shit on iTunes? Somebody's going to collect some money for them to just email your song over to iTunes in the correct format, and then iTunes takes 30%. Like, if you got rid of that and you got it where I was like, say I gave you a David Bowie song. If there was a way to just have a proof of ownership and have like a transaction fee, like there is in Bitcoin, where if I just gave you an album that would like somehow pay David Bowie when right. you get it, you know, there not there doesn't need to be the iTunes, the store you go to get it. It's like, really, if I'm sending you a song via an email, there should be a way to like build a decentralized distribution platform like that.
It's crazy that Amazon takes that much, or that iTunes rather takes that much.
Yeah,
how can they do that?
I'll tell you why. Because everyone said the internet is never going to be a way that people buy music, and iTunes said, we're here and we're putting our flag down and you guys are going to be sorry. And that's what happened. They jumped in when nobody cared. There were meetings that they said, we don't care. Don't talk to us about MP3s. Like Sony said, don't talk to us about MP3s until it's 30% of the market. And by the time it was 30% of the market, iTunes was fucking had iPods and was way to.
But 30% seems like a lot of money, because it's not even like they're storing it on their website and then you download it from their servers. Like, they need all the bandwidth. And so you're, you know, because your album is, you know, X amount of gigs that it, I mean, that's not what's going on. They're not storing it.
Well, I mean,
like, you have to have a host.
They do store it. I mean,
do they? Well, they don't do it for podcasts. Your podcast gets downloaded from a host.
Like a torrent?
Yeah, I have a company called, the company's called Libsyn, and Libsyn
is a server. Oh, yeah, but see, this is what TuneCore is.
So that's what TuneCore is?
That's the way TuneCore or like Reverb Nation and all those things work, is you can get your stuff. I mean, that's essentially it, but I believe that it goes into the back end at iTunes. I think that a lot of those companies, like if I don't pay TuneCore after 5 years, my music will go off iTunes. So, like, they have the control over that. But I've also seen labels go directly to iTunes, not via those things, and go use the back end there. I mean, I don't know. I thought they did store the shit. But, you know, I mean, I should probably know that, and I don't know that. But the reality is 30%, I don't care what you call it. It's a duplicate of a digital file.
Yeah.
That costs nothing to replicate.
It is kind of crazy.
Yeah. That's why so many artists held out for so long on it, but then they just buckled and went. But I know that there's dirty deals that went down in the back room where like certain people got better cuts off that, like the Beatles. I bet you money they're not taking 30% of the Beatles. But they would never admit to that. But dude, everything's a dirty deal. Listen to this shit. Billboard charts, you think about it, you're like, "Oh, this album's number 1 on Billboard." There are certain artists that I've heard about where they've had the like sponsorships with like, say, Coors Light, and the week the record comes out, Coors Light buys 300,000 copies of the record, so that goes number 1. I mean, it's all rigged financially. It's all rigged by money. So it's like none of it's real. The Grammys aren't real. You know, it's To me, it's also strange.
The Grammys aren't real.
Yeah, none of that's real. Do you think any of that's real? Do you,
like, there in what
are
way?
People, there are people that charge, that are services, that are people that were at one point worked for the Grammy organization, and they have the email addresses of all the people that they know that vote. So there are people that will charge you like $5,000 to bombard these people with emails all year, so that by the time they see the voting sheet, they're like, oh, that fucking person, I'll vote for that. Like, there's things like that. But besides that, dude, it's like the Grammys are a self-contained operation of like the old media. Like, it's like Clive Davis and all those people, and they're all like a random band from nowhere who nobody's ever heard of is never going to win a Grammy unless they've got money behind them. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So like the whole show, like what I mean, like the billboards are fake and all that shit. All that shit's not real. It's not like the 50s where like Muddy Waters puts out something and it goes straight to the top of the charts, and all of a sudden like race music becomes like this big thing. It's not that way anymore. It's all corporate, controlled by the 1%. It's controlled by the Viacoms of the world who are putting it on the television, who are deciding who's going to win. Like Arcade Fire wins a fucking Grammy because they think that like, you know, everyone feels like it's been too pop oriented. So let's give one to Arcade Fire this year. And it's like, as much as I want to believe that there are like the fans are in any way involved in these kind of processes, they're totally not. It's just all the marketing. There's fucking five people calling all the radio station programming for the year. There's, you know, people buying their way to the top of the buying Grammys and buying their way to the top of Billboard. It's like if rich people are the only people that have the ability to buy their way in the top, like why would Muddy Waters even care? Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? But it's just the system has changed so much. Like,
but that isn't that just the system as far as like the awards and award shows? Yeah,
that's
and
what I'm saying.
Those
all
lines.
Those kind of things, like the accolades that go along with being a musician, like the, you know, going out and playing a show and having a grassroots thing, like that's one thing that's real. But like all the accolades of the billboards and the awards and all that stuff is just for show. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's highly manipulated. So,
well, it makes sense. I mean, it totally makes sense. I mean, why wouldn't they manipulate it if they could manipulate it if it led to financial gain?
That's of course, the if they're scratching nature each other's of their business. Backs, like, you know, yeah. Clive Davis is going to make a record and he's going to give it to the when they go to their Bohemian Grove little party that they do or whatever. They're going to fucking. He's going to say, "Hey, I'm going to send you the new, you know, Kanye record or whatever. I'm going to send you the new Alicia Keys record." And these radio stations are going to fucking, you know, they're going to get, you know, they're not getting payola, but they're fucking getting free trips to Disneyland for their whole family and like five other people, you know, mm-hmm. to fucking play like this record that so-and-so's invested in. So just, to me, it's all a kind of a joke. And that's probably why I'm not a rich man, is because I spout off about this shit all the time on my radio show too. And I'm like fucking,
what's your radio show on?
I'm on Sirius XM on Outlaw Country, channel 60. I'm on.
Is that the XXX channel? Is that what it is?
Oh, well, it's called Electric Rodeo. The XXX thing was something where I was trying to actually, it's kind of defunct in a way now. I mean, I still play all those bands, but there's this whole like underground country, underground kind of roots blues thing that was happening, and it was getting boxed into this Americana shit. It was getting real like Americana and country and everything. There was this real big gap in the middle, and there was all these bands that were falling in the gap. So I was like, I started a website with that, and it was kind of just a play on AAA radio. And I was like, I don't know. I got more heat over it. I mean, it helped a lot of artists, and I know it did because I'm friends with them. And it definitely, I've now started producing a lot of other people and started working in the studio with them more as opposed to promoting them, which has been really good. But it was just a way of trying to promote all these really great bands that really just weren't getting any chance. But I still play all those bands on my radio show. But it's called Electric Rodeo. I've been doing it like 9 years now, which is kind of insane. But I don't do it like this. I do it on the fly. I was like looking at this and I'm like, man, since I've been doing my show for 9 years, I was like, that I would actually have something to show for it. You guys are smarter than I am. So, you know, I do mine on the fly on my laptop, like wherever I'm at. Sometimes I've done it on an airplane when I'm flying, you know, just whenever I got to get it in by the end of the week. So,
well, this thing is just, I mean, we need other people here. You know, yeah. This is like a location to do it from, you know?
But fucking what a great location when the fucking wolf and predator and fucking lava lamps and fucking antlers, and this place is insane.
Well, we turned it into this. When we first moved in here, it was the opposite.
It was like a boardroom or something?
Yeah, it was just a regular office
room. Even the covers over the fluorescent lights, I've never seen that shit before.
Oh, there's space, yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's the vibe in this room. It's like, I would never, if I were you, I would just stay in this room all the time. Just never leave. The pool table outside.
Yeah, man. It's a good spot. It's a
great spot, man.
Yeah, I think it's important to have a space where you feel comfortable. You know, you feel like you could just chill out. It doesn't feel corporate. I think it enhances the conversations in a lot of ways.
For sure, man.
You know, and also it's a creepy secret spot. It feels like a creepy secret spot.
It's great, man. It's great. I love it.
So you think that you doing your radio show and being honest about all these things has held you back?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do know, like, one time I said the thing about the billboard, and I had evidence of this, and I'm not going to say what artist it was because I'm not in the business of doing that, but there was this big-name artist who had this new record coming out, and his sponsor company bought 300,000 copies of it first week so they would make sure that it went number one. And I said that on the radio, and my boss says, and he's told me, I've gotten a lot of calls. They've called him and they say, he's saying this shit and it's irresponsible because it's not true. And I'm like, yes, it is true. I know it's true. I've seen the paper that said it was true. But I mean, I think they get pissed that I say it. A lot of people don't like me. They blackballed me a long time ago anyway, because I was just I've always been that way, man. I'm to my disadvantage a lot of ways, but like, if someone's a phony, I hate that more than anything in the world, man. And, you know, there have been times in my life when I was a phony growing up, you know, with girls and with things like, so, you know, you try to get into that. But as you get older and as I've gotten older, it's just, there's so much insincerity, and especially in the music business, that I have such a disdain for it. It's just like the way that the writers work. I mean, what's happened to country music is directly responsible. I mean, directly related to, like, the exact same, you know, what we're talking about, corporate America. It's like the same kind of shit. It's just gotten to where these corporations are in so much power and they have so much money that it's really hard for, like, the little man to beat it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just get really, I see people who pretend to be for the little man, but yet they're playing this fucking ball game over here and it, like, talking out of both sides of their mouth, and it just kills me. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I'll say it. I'll happily say it all day long, you know, but yeah, like, I definitely think that it, there are groups. I just found out about a group in Nashville, but there are groups much like the Bilderberg group where they in music and in movies and things. I mean, I know that everybody knows they kind of have that kind of thing, but there are actual groups where they orchestrate kind of who they're going to lend their support to. I mean, they never played me on the radio. It's not like they're going to have a meeting and they're saying, we're going to purposely keep Shooter out. It's not like that. Not that paranoid, but I do know that they have meetings about, where the studio heads and the local community and the Congress and city planners and developers and certain record labels, mostly independent. The independents have kind of chokeholded out the corporate ones a little bit. They've, in a weird way, especially in Nashville, but in the songwriters and the radio people, and they have these retreats that they go on together. And it's like, duh, like, of course they're all scratching each other's backs. Like,
right.
Of course, like, the little guy, they have to pay like 15 grand to join this group to go on these retreats, you know, and keep paying. And it's like, it's fascinating to me, you know, like when people are like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That doesn't happen. It's like, if you think that doesn't happen, then you are dumb, because of course these people want to keep their job. They want to stay and they want to keep making the money they're making. So they'll do anything it takes to keep that position.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, right? That people that are in that sort of a position, they're making a shitload of money, don't realize, like, man, this is kind of bad for the art form itself.
Yeah.
To do this. Like, very art form that we need,
they
that we're selling.
Yeah, they want, it's the short-term victory that they want, and it's like the long-term, like people like us, you know, like I'm a movie fan, like Blade Runner is my favorite movie of all time, but
great,
I'm crazy, oh man, I watched it the other day.
How many times have you watched it?
I mean, hundreds at least. I mean, I just bought all these prints, these posters.
Is that off a Philip K. Dick novel?
Yes.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah, yeah. Andrew's Dream of Electric Sheep is the name of the book.
What a great fucking movie.
Man, great movie. And stands up.
At the end of the movie, the original version was Harrison Ford supposed to find out that he's a robot too?
Well, that's kind of the point of the book. It's like the point of the movie a little bit is that, I mean, it's implied in that, especially when at the very end of the movie, Edward James, almost his character, like, he's been leaving this origami all over the place, mm-hmm. but he leaves the unicorn. But see, in the original one, I just watched the theatrical one for the first time. I had never seen it. The one where Harrison Ford narrates the film.
Oh, that's the original director's cut.
No, the director's cut is when he does not. They took his voice off, and they took the last scene out of the movie where they drive away.
That's the only one you've seen.
The one
up until now.
Which one? The director's cut?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the only one you can buy. The minute it was available on DVD, I don't know about VHS, but like the minute the DVDs came out, the director's cut saturated the market. So like on Vudu, I bought it. I was like trying to figure out a way when I was traveling on the road in a car and to venue. I was trying to figure out a way to... I don't have enough space on my fucking iPhone because the fucking iCloud and the pictures and all this shit, and it's always full, and I don't want to throw it against the fucking wall, you know? But the Vudu app lets me watch movies. So I was like, oh, I'm going to watch Blade Runner. And then I pulled it up, and it was that version, which I had never seen. But then there was a final cut that was made about 7 or 8 years ago that came out. And that one has the deleted unicorn scene in it. And what that is that I guess... That Harrison Ford's character has some kind of a, like, there's a unicorn thing in his past, in his memory. He has a memory of a unicorn, and there's a scene where in the movie, in the final cut, where he shoots that chick that had the snake around her neck. When he shoots her, there's this shot of this unicorn because it, like, reminded him of this thing, and it's kind of like connecting the dots that he has this weird memory of a unicorn in the woods. And at the very end of the film, Edward James almost makes a unicorn. He walks out the front door of his house, and there's a unicorn out of origami sitting there. And that's like Edward James almost saying, hey, you know, you're actually one too. So that was kind of the implied. But the whole thing is like, you know, if she's one, if he's one, you know, anyone could be one. And that was the kind of, you know, am I a robot? Are we all robots? Like, you know, that's kind of the ultimate story. But it never confirms that. But in the book, they run away together and... She ends up dying, and it's like a love story, and it ends up not mattering if he is one or not, because he's, you know.
Well, in the real world that we live in right now, that seems like much more likely a possibility than it ever did when Blade Runner came out.
Yeah, man.
Like back then, like the idea of a robot that looks exactly like a person, like, yeah, might as well be traveling to the moon, might as well be fucking, you know, Battlestar Galactica or something.
Xenu.
Yeah, right. But now, when you see the artificial bodies that they're able to create now, like these robot faces that move and articulate just like a human face, like really similar, though, some of those Japanese ones, they're so similar.
Yeah.
And you just imagine, what's 100 years from now going to be like?
In like this, the company that made the Tupac hologram and the Michael Jackson one, they reached out to me, and I met the guy yesterday, this guy Gary. And I may be going there. I have to go get my kids from here, and I may be taking them to this guy, because he's contacted me about wanting to do like a Waylon hologram. Like, I think that they're trying to talk about getting a bunch of the guys and making a hologram of like Cash and Waylon and all the Opry and all the, who knows. But like, he wants to give me the demonstration. But I was talking to him about it, and he said, man, you know, the shit on TV, like, when it's not lit a certain way, like, he didn't like the lighting on the Michael Jackson one. He said it wasn't right. But he said that when they do it correctly, see, it's like with Michael Jackson, they have a body double, and then they have this face technology that does the face on top of someone else's face. Mm-hmm. So it looks like right. But like, you don't really have to do that. Like, it's not CGI people. So they have the ability right now. They have the ability to do the Help Me Obi-Wan. Like, they have one thing that's got these 3D cameras, and I can be in that room. He was telling me a story about a guy in India who was running for president or whatever their fucking thing is over there, and that he told people he was really rich and he had like 3% of the vote, and he set up these hologram things in like every town, and he paid for them to all be over there and said like, hey, come see me, I'm gonna talk to your town, and he like stood at home in this thing and he appeared in like 50 towns and they didn't even know it was a hologram.
What?
They thought he was really there, and he never told them. So they thought he really came to their fucking shit town where there's nothing to do, like, you know, their little village. And it was like this guy, and like he said, right now, like I could go over there, and they could have like a hologram thing set up in Japan, and I could like literally walk in front of the cameras, and I'd be in Japan, and I'd be talking to motherfuckers, and totally like help me Obi-Wan, save me Obi-Wan, or like the fucking Sith Lord guy appearing, like talking to Vader. Wow. But it doesn't even look like that. He said that when it's in a normal room, it looks like you can't tell the difference from a hologram. I will report to you on this after I go to it, I go see this demonstration.
Do you remember when they had that on television for CNN when they were covering the news and Wolf Blitzer would like stand in the CNN hologram, the holodeck?
No.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. They experimented with it during elections. You got a video of it, Jamie?
Hi. Right.
This He's is got the a guy, Indian me. Guy.
Let's see the Indian guy.
Oh, you found it.
Yeah. That's him?
It's really long. It's like 45 minutes.
Well, so that dude right there is a hologram.
Technology ke madhyam se.
So he's not really there.
Baat karne ka saubhagya mila
hai. He just kind of appeared.
Wow. How's he appear? It would be dope if he fucking appeared out of smoke.
Yeah, they're saying a demonstration they gave. They had a guy who was like presenting an award, and he was standing in the room, and this whole family walked in the room, and he was standing there, and he talked to them, and they were like talking to him back and everything, and then he just busted into flames, and they were like all freaked out because they thought he was real.
Look at this. Look at how he comes in. First of all, how strange. Let him walk in again, Jamie. Back it up a little again. Because that guy's got the fakest hand wave ever. I would never vote for that motherfucker. Just by the way, maybe this is like an Indian thing that I don't understand. Look at that. They're introducing homeboy. Look. First of all, he's wearing a dress. What's that all about? Are you a school teacher? You're an old lady school teacher?
Oh, man.
He's got a theme song, too. Look. That's hilarious. He's fucking waving his hands. He's wearing white tights and a dress. This guy's a freak. He's a hologram. He's wearing white tights and a dress. And he's going to sit down in a chair.
Hologram. His white tights and a dress.
So bizarre, man. That's so bizarre.
Isn't it wow. Crazy? I mean, the technology that you can, the fact that you can do that is just like, it's so amazing. Like, I would love to not have to ever do a show, like travel to do a show, just stand in my fucking.
People want you to be there, though. They want you to be there physically.
Know. They didn't know.
Yeah, but isn't it something about actually knowing that the guy's there?
Yeah, of course. You know? It's like, did you ever hear that band Man or Astro Man?
No.
They were a band like in the like early 2000s, late 90s, but they had clone bands. They had wore masks. They wore these hoods. So they had like five clone bands, and they'd send them out on the road, and you would never know if it was the real band or not because they always had the hoods on and shit. But they would have like five different bands they would just send out touring.
Oh, that's silly.
Yeah. You know, people didn't know it.
I know, but isn't that like half the thing?
Of course.
The reason why you pay to see, you want the guy to be right there.
Yeah.
You know, like your reputation would be really damaged if they found out that you were actually in your living room and the shit fucked up. And like, it like started fucking up while you were doing it.
Man, I would be righteous though if I was watching fucking like, you know, Nine Inch Nails.
See if you can find a CNN thing.
Yeah.
See the CNN thing that they did during
the Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah, they only did it during the elections, and it's like everybody's like, "Ooh, they're busting out the fucking hologram. This is crazy!"
Oh, wow.
And he would, you know, be in another location, and they, you know, they would appear.
They started it with Will I Am, the guy from the Black Eyed Peas.
They started with him,
and then they used it with him.
I don't know they used it. It was at an Obama event. It wasn't at a John McCain didn't pull out
the CNN reporters did it. Let's see, like there. Chicago, it's a beautiful time in Los Angeles. My mom texts me, telling me how proud she is of me. And pull it back so you can see him appear.
That's fascinating.
a brand new day in
live in Grant Park. Let's see if we
look
can
at that.
Beam him in now. There we go.
Like, let's make Will, it look as much like Star Trek as we can. The appearing process.
Oh, this is great. You know, we're at the eve of a brand new day in America.
How weird is that?
Being here in Chicago.
Via hologram, performer like and stuff. Obama supporter.
Yeah, it looks like basically like exactly like in Star Trek when they would beam people down. That's what it looks like right here.
Yeah, but this is it's a beautiful time here in Chicago. It's a beautiful time in Los Angeles. My mom.
What's the purpose
me,
of this? Just to show off,
just to show off the technology. Yeah. Well, to just an added element. They did it with Wolf Blitzer. I remember he was a hologram too. Isn't it funny, though, to listen to that guy? It's a beautiful time. Everything's amazing. Cut to everybody fucking hates him.
Yeah,
6 years later.
Right.
You fucking piece of shit. All of you, you fuckheads. Even Will I Am, right? Didn't he, like, run for, he was going to be the president of Haiti or some shit like that?
No. That was,
oh, that was the other guy.
The guy from the
I confused Will I Am with
the Fugees.
What's his name?
Wyclef Jean.
Wyclef Jean.
They're the same guy to me.
Yeah, it's. I was about to make that joke when you said that about it being Wyclef Jean, and then you said it.
Yeah, who's this broad?
Going to be let in, some but CNN as many reporter, as a million are expected.
Another one.
It's like she's some chick that Will.i.am was banging like 20 minutes before. Did you hear the guy? Do you, all the controversy about the dude who Baba Booey'd? No, he didn't Baba Booey'd. He the MSNBC thing recently, the Howard Stern thing.
Like, no. What happened?
MSNBC. Do you know what I'm talking about? There was a guy who, I kept trying to remember his whack pack name on there, but like he had gone into retirement from doing prank calls. Well, one day recently, they were talking about the Malaysia Air thing. And this guy calls in and they're like, we've got this soldier from the war on the phone. And he goes, yes, I believe I saw something. I was driving and I looked out of my passenger window. I saw something. I believe it was a giant burst of wind from Howard Stern's ass that hit the Malaysia plane. And all of a sudden, like, the lady's like, excuse me? She's like, so can you tell me what you, like, she starts to, and he goes, boy, you're fucking dumb, aren't you? To the girl. And they, like, cut the transmission. And there was, like, and he turns out, and he wrote an email to Howard Stern's people. He said, this is how I got in the air. He said, he called in, and he said that he was a soldier in the Air Force or something. And they put him on the phone with another guy who then, like, was trying to quiz him on him being legit. And
right.
He said he bullshitted his way all the way through it. The guy let him through. They let him on fucking MSNBC in this moment. And this chick, her name was Crystal Ball, was the name of the chick. I can remember it. And she was just like, you know, had no idea what to do with that when the guy said fucking burst of wind from Howard Stern's ass is what hit it. Like, you know,
so
MSNBC, like, is in all this trouble. Because, like, no one was paying attention while it went down for so long. For a couple of minutes, and then they cut it, and it was like, man, everyone got fired because it was like, I mean, they not only did he get through, but they didn't even catch that he said Howard Stern's ass for a long time.
Well, when you're doing those things, those remotes, you have an earpiece in, and a lot of times it's hard to understand what the fuck anybody's saying, and there's a bit of a delay between them saying it and you hearing it.
Crystal Ball, I can forgive her, but the guy sitting over there watching the fucking broadcast, or supposedly watching the broadcast when it goes down, and editing on the fly and all that guy should have been like, cut it, you know, cut it now. But I don't know.
Do you remember
that.
The Sum Ting Wong when the plane crashed?
Oh, yeah, that was another one.
Like four different names, and they all got fired because some editor fucked up. And
yeah, so there's Sum Ting Wong. Did you see that?
It's yeah. Like, there was something recently, the New York Daily News let some fake story go through and didn't do any fact-checking. It was all over the news. I forget what New York Daily News hoaxed. Daily.
That's funny, man. They all are.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
People are trying so hard, you know?
It's like when fake news comes through, that's like the most real thing we're getting.
Yeah. Well, you know, we live in strange times where anybody can get information out.
Yeah.
And you can, but especially with these legacy media places like that, like news, like we're getting someone who's live on the scene, and like that's like those are targets for people fucking with people.
Yeah.
It's like, because you know that everyone's looking at this, everyone's paying attention to this. If you can get on there and Baba Booey it, you'll definitely get like some play on the radio show.
Yeah.
So people will do things like that. I don't know.
Howard Stern's penis.
Yeah, it's we're in weird times when it comes to that. Yeah. We're also in weird times when it comes to those things being relevant at all, because at a certain point in time, you got people. They're realizing that more people are paying attention to online sources
Facebook
than they are
Twitter. Yeah. Than they are, yeah,
Facebook, Twitter, all the above. There's so many different things.
It's like the nightly news. Like who? I mean, I'll watch. I do. I will say, like, if I'm cruising the channels and I'm home and like the 5-6 o'clock news is on, I'll turn it on because if locally to LA, like if there's anything going on, I'll kind of be interested in that. But otherwise, like, who watches the news on like channel 2?
Yeah.
I mean, who watches fucking CNN? The only reason why they watch CNN is because of, you know, it'll be something massive has happened and people want to tune in and like watch it 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's like, you don't really.
It's going away. It's going away slowly but surely. And also the format is so bizarre. The evening news, like the Los Angeles evening news, those are the fakest broadcasts in the world. The way everyone talks is fake. You don't see any personality. You don't have any connection to those people. You know, if you had someone like Shooter Jennings reads the news, like, man, some shit went down today. You know, and you start, people would connect to that.
Yeah.
In a way, like, oh, this is a real guy, and he's telling me about some real stuff. But if you watch the average broadcast that's on a local news show, it's so fake.
Yeah, and it's so, like, uptight and weird. Yeah, and it's just the same garbage dumped to you. Like, it's not updated. That's why people, like, you know, I look at my Twitter feed for that. Like, if I hear something's going on or if I, like, you know, if I see something, like, it's like the culmination of all the people I follow kind of provide the correct information. Do you know what I mean? That seems more effective to me.
Yeah. And even then, you still have to process stuff. There's so much bullshit. It's so difficult to figure out what's right and what's wrong. And then when you have disinformation thrown into the mix, I mean, it's been proven that government organizations will, when there's something bad goes down, they'll throw a bunch of wacky shit into the news as well to sort of counterbalance. Like, there's a lot of people out there that believe that a lot of the conspiracy theorists that, like, say the most ridiculous shit, that they're being hired to say ridiculous shit because it makes all conspiracies sound silly.
Yeah. Of course, I believe that 100%. I believe that there are misinformation agents all over the place. Manly P. Hall was one.
Who?
Manly P. Hall, famous writer, and wrote a lot of books about a lot of conspiracy type thing, and he was a straight up disinformation agent for the Masons.
Really?
He was out there trying to cloud up the religion side of things for the Masons via the conspiracy world. And Manly P. Hall is like famous, and a lot of people swear by his shit, but he was really a Mason, and he was like in bed with that.
What did they ever figure that William, what's the guy who wrote Behold a Pale Horse?
Man, we could talk about this guy a lot. Have you
Bill Cooper?
Cooper, man, I love his shit, dude. And did you ever
But he wrote a lot of really
show?
Nutty shit about like alien bases on the moon and.
Yeah, he got into some shit like that in there, but man, did you ever listen to his radio show?
No.
You can download every episode of it. I've been trying. I've been in contact with his estate because I'm trying to take the Hour of the Time is the name of the show, and every single episode. You know, he was killed on the 5th of November 2001.
Was he?
He was the U.S.
Wasn't
Marshals.
He like in a fight or a gunfight?
He said on the air, he was like, "Look, because Bill Clinton is labeled him the most dangerous person on radio." And he said, they're going to come after me. And he goes, and I bet you money that they're going to use the IRS as the reason. And so they did. They had it. So he moved his family away and they came after him for tax evasion. And when he wouldn't comply, they sent the U.S. Marshals in there and they shot at him and he shot one of them and they killed him.
Really?
Yeah, but he's, man, that story, that dude is very fascinating because he is the real life, like dude. I mean, in the Black Ribbons record, the Stephen King character gets killed and everything at the end. I mean, he's the real life character of that. Like, this guy was out there and his radio show was awesome. And he was just like telling you, like, the first person talking about the Bilderberg Group, the first person talking about all these people and just laying it out there no matter what, who it pissed off. And eventually it pissed off enough people to get him killed. But he's very fascinating. And in the hour of the time, I wanted to take the first episode of it and print it on a 12-inch vinyl because it's just long enough. I wanted to put music under it and make a record on a record label, and I was trying to get the family to let me do that. But they were interested, but then they kind of disappeared on me. But,
have you ever looked into William Cooper Debunked?
I've looked into some of that stuff. But, I mean, to me, William Cooper, I mean, obviously he was hitting on some pretty harsh things if he was killed by the United States government. I mean, they'd
have... Well, maybe he owed a lot of taxes, and he got in a shootout with the federal marshals who came to arrest him. Is that possible, too?
Yeah, but if you listen to his show, he's very sane. He's very collected. He's very smart, very educated. Like, it'd be one thing if he was like full of shit, but he's not. Like, if you listen to his show, he was very wise to things, and he was saying a lot of shit that would piss a lot of people off. And I know for a fact a lot of it is true.
I read his book, and halfway in the book, I was like, "Bitch!" And I tossed it across the room.
On the Behold a Pale Horse.
Yeah. There was some wacky shit in there. Well, if you go to Rational Wiki. He believed that UFO people were controlling the world. That UFO technology had been used in Vietnam. He became one of the stars on the UFO lecture circuit, writing books that alleged that space aliens were part of the New World Order. He later believed that he had been tricked into believing in aliens, and it was all part of an Illuminati plot, including the JFK assassination and the fake moon landings.
You know about the Kubrick moon landing thing, right?
What about it?
About how there's a theory that the U.S. government wanted the technology that he developed during Dr. Strangelove and he used in 2001 for the monkeys and in the backgrounds and the way he shot that stuff, that they came to him to film to fake the moon landings.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And they said
yeah.
they would fund, they would give him unlimited access to NASA and everything for 2001 and fund every film forever. And so that supposedly, like, he was hinting at a lot of it in 2001 and in Eyes Wide Shut, especially in Eyes Wide Shut, that he was hinting to like what he'd done in the movie a lot.
Well, there's documentaries that show all the secret symbolism that he put into The Shining.
That movie's terrible because, see, I had studied all that shit, man, and it's so true. There's such cool shit in it. And that movie was like, they were interviewing the craziest people on the planet Earth with no frame of reference to what they were talking about. And like, when you watch that movie, it's like, it sounds like they're crazy. It sounds like everything about the movie is bullshit because these people who are talking are clearly insane. But the people who like actually did the research before those kooks are the people that it was kind of fascinating about. But I'm a big Kubrick nerd anyway.
Kubrick was definitely a genius, definitely a fascinating guy. If anybody was capable of faking anything,
you gotta read
remotely
Reality
Sandwich
is a website. Reality Sandwich. There's an article.
Yeah, I've read that. Yeah, I'm not convinced.
I'm
fascinated.
I'm not convinced.
You know,
I'm not convinced about any of it. To be honest, I'm not convinced about the moon landing. I'm not convinced about this. So I mean, I don't know.
You ever heard Bill Clinton's take on the moon landing?
No.
It's one of the best. Bill Clinton wrote this book called My Life, and in his book My Life, he had a whole quote about the moon. Here, I'll pull it up.
Oh, I know the My Life book.
This is the quote he wrote. In this quote, he wrote about when he was young, and he had seen the moon landing. He goes, "This is I forget what page it is. It just says, just a month before, Apollo 11 astronauts Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong had left their colleague Michael Collins above aboard Starship Columbia and walked on the moon, beating by 5 months President Kennedy's goal of putting a man on the moon before the end of the decade. The old carpenter asked me if I believed that it happened. I said, sure, I saw it on television. He disagreed. He said that he didn't believe it for a minute and that them television fellers, in quote, could make things look real that weren't. Back then, I thought he was a crank. During my 8 years in Washington, I saw some things on TV that made me wonder if he wasn't ahead of his time." That's fucking crazy. That's crazy that a president
would say that.
Of the United States would say, I saw some things on television during my time in Washington that make me wonder if he wasn't ahead of his time, specifically talking about a guy claiming that the moon landings were fake.
See, I could totally buy it, too, because of the fact that, especially in then and where technology is, I mean, look at us now. Like, we haven't gone back, and we've sent a rover to Mars, but we have not done...
Well, rovers are easy. The real thing is biological life in space. That's the really difficult thing because of the radiation, because of the solar flares, because of all sorts of micrometeors. There's all sorts of things that can happen to someone when they're outside.
Yeah.
You know, when you're out there in space, you're not protected by the environment. You're not protected by the atmosphere. So there's no protection from, like, micrometeors, asteroidal impacts, like, all the different things. Like, when you see shooting stars, those are fucking rocks that were in space that made their way down to Earth, but they get eaten up in the atmosphere, and they burn out.
Yeah, I mean...
The radiation's the big one.
I mean, here's the thing. I think that we're going to know, and I tell you when we're going to know, is these independent contractors are trying to get to the moon, Google being one of them. When someone else besides the government goes to the moon, I don't mean the Russian government right around the same time, like if someone independent goes to the moon and it looks way different than it did when they did it in the 60s, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, like really don't float when we walk here, you know what I mean? Like, then we'll know. You know, there's a lot of fucking things about that. There's, if you know, on that one website with the Kubrick thing, they like do this contrast thing where it kind of compares the 2001 monkey scenes to the...
Yeah, well, they were comparing a style of filming calling, I think it was called front screen projection.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
That's exactly what it is. Front screen or rear screen or whatever it is. It's he had a... It's like a two-way mirror, and there's these certain kind of beads, and there's the projection coming from a different angle, and it was able to, like, you're able to film the actors on the stage at the same time as the background instead of adding it later, so that's why it looks real.
Yeah, the reality sandwich title is How Kubrick Faked the Moon Landing.
Yeah.
You know, I think, I don't know if this is... I believed in it wholeheartedly for a long time, and this Reality Sandwich article shows the use of this front screen projection method and how it mimics, I think that's what it's called, how it mimics what the shots looked like from the moon landings. The real issue with the moon landings is how few, if you stop and think about between 1969 and 1972, that's when all these took place. And that no one has been more than 400 miles above the Earth's surface since then.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what seems so ridiculous to me.
Well, not know? Only that. How about when Neil Armstrong? There's a 20th anniversary of the moon landing for NASA, and he gives a speech, or 25th anniversary, I think it was. Yeah, that's what it was. And he gives this speech at the White House, and his words were, "There are great ideas, undiscovered breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers." That's the quote that he gives. He's speaking to America's honor students, like all the high school students that get the best grades in science and math and all these different things. And they're all there listening to this guy who was the first man on the moon talk. And this is the thing he says. "There are great ideas, undiscovered breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers."
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
God.
Like, that's between him and Clinton. It's almost like if the moon landings were real, like, they're clearly fucking with everybody.
Yeah.
They're just begging for people to read into it.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't real, it's almost like poetic how they're dropping these truths.
Yeah, that was how, with Kubrick, like, they said that in a lot of the films, like, he was dropping, like, the guilt of the fact that he lied, that he did this thing, and that it's you know, that he was trying to admit it in a lot of the films.
It is pretty crazy that the last time people went was 1972.
Yeah, like, and so we haven't even come fucking close since then. It's
not only have we not come close, we've never gone further than 400 miles. That's the thing about every single space shuttle mission, every space station mission, everything is inside of 400 miles from the Earth's surface, except the Apollo missions. All of those were 260,000 miles and back. You know, it's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. And I mean, it's like, you're like, yeah, no one's ever going to make it to the moon. They're never going to prove it. We'll be all be dead by the time they do anyway, so who cares?
The big mind fuck for me is when you look at the moon itself. Like, you're sitting at home and you look up, you see the moon, and you're like, bitch, nobody went there.
Yeah, you're like, you did not. No way. Look at that shit. That's bullshit.
But we know that they did go to space. So if they go to, I mean, I couldn't believe they could go to space in a fucking they just went around rocket from 1969.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I would look, I love sexy ideas. And the big sexy idea is that they didn't go, that they faked it all, and they somehow or another kept it from the American people. That's the big sexy idea.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the fun one.
That's you know? The fun version.
It's also that that time was just so filled with bullshit. That was the time of the Nixon administration, Watergate, and fucking, I mean, that was just lying. The Gulf of Tonkin incident, they'd already faked, they got us into Vietnam with a fake fucking attack.
Yeah.
I mean, that's widely accepted now that the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
It was a false flag.
Yeah. Didn't really happen. And that caused more than 1 million deaths.
Yeah.
They got us into, I mean, that's way crazier than the idea of just faking a trip to a nearby planet.
It's true, man. You're so right, man. And you know, as time goes on, like, these things do get exposed.
That would be a motherfucker of a mind fuck, though, if they did find out that it really was all bullshit, that no one did land on the moon.
Yeah, what if everything was true? All the conspiracy shit was true. You know what I mean? Like, you just start finding that shit out. I mean, look, man, if what's his name? Virgin Galactic. If you can pay in Bitcoin to get on a fucking trip to space right now, like, take me to the moon.
Yeah, that's too far. They can't really do that. Did you ever hear about the fake moon rock that was given to Holland by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin?
No, it was fake?
Yeah. Pull it up. It's kind of interesting, Jamie.
Wait a minute.
There was a moon rock that was given to the Dutch prime minister by the Apollo 11 astronauts. Once they examined it, like many, many years later, they were doing it for, I believe it was for an insurance investigation, and it was actually just petrified wood.
Really?
Yeah, it was attached to a plaque that said it was there from, you know, Apollo 11 and Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and taking this from the moon. And this is the
piece. They said, yeah. And Buzz Aldrin and Neil said, yeah, this is really for the moon.
Oh, yeah, that's what it said on the
they
plaque.
They lied.
Well, you know, whoever gave them the rock. I mean, I don't know if the actual rock was handed to them by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, but it was supposedly a rock that was given to the Dutch prime minister from the Apollo 11 astronauts in 1969, and it was fake.
Wow.
Yeah. It was it was during a global tour. Wow. It was given to them 50 years. Okay, it says the rock was given to William Dries, a former Dutch leader, during a global tour by Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, and Buzz Aldrin following their moon mission. Yeah. The rock was then donated to a museum after the Dutch prime minister's death in 1988. And so then after that, I guess they had decided to test it. And when they tested it, they found out that it was actually just petrified wood.
So fucking dumb.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe it's just like they're like, "Fuck this guy." Just give him. Maybe we did go to the moon, but it's, you know, rocks are valuable. This guy's the Dutch prime minister. Give him. You got some shit that looks like a moon rock? Yeah, it's a symbolic gesture.
Either way, if Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong were in the know, then the moon landing is faked. I mean, that's just
who knows if they were in the know.
But if they weren't in the know, then even further. Look, dude. If you and I walked on the moon together, and it was just the two of us,
mm-hmm.
and we came back, and we're the only two humans that walked on the fucking moon, first of all, wouldn't you think that we would, like, look around and be like, man, look at this shit? I mean, you don't think we would be like, la, 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 whatever, it's the moon, there's just another place. So, by the time you get to this, if somebody hands you a fucking piece of wood, this petrified wood, and tells you, hey, this is from your moon trip, first of all, neither one of you picked it up and brought it back, because you know that. Second of all, like, don't you think we would know that it's not, especially if our whole life was meant to get to this point. And somebody hands you this rock that you're supposed to give to someone that is a moon rock. Don't you think that...
I don't know. I'm not a geologist, so I could never even speculate as to whether or not I'd be able to tell where a rock came from.
Well, you'd know for sure that you didn't pick it up and bring it back.
Maybe, but maybe it looks a lot like a rock that you brought back and you'd think it was. You know, I don't know what the fuck a moon rock actually looks. Pull up a real moon rock. Let's yeah, I mean, look. We just saw that image.
As if there is a real moon rock.
Well, they definitely got moon rocks that came from asteroidal impacts. And that was actually one of the big points of contention because Wernher von Braun, who was a Nazi, a straight-up Nazi, ladies and gentlemen. That's a real moon rock?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It looks like an asteroid. It looks like it came from space. It's that's like, the thing about the Wernher Herzog thing. Wernher von Braun, rather. Wernher von Braun was in Antarctica in 1969 before the actual, or 67? One of those. Before the actual moon landings took place, collecting asteroids. They had gone to Antarctica because Antarctica is one of the places where they could be assured that a lot of the asteroids that had landed there, for whatever reason, they knew
were still there,
were from the moon themselves. So they collected a lot of these to examine them.
Interesting.
Yeah, this picture is of Wernher von Braun in Antarctica. He had a broken arm at the time. I don't know what happened to him. Maybe he's thinking about not faking the moon. They beat the fuck up.
Yeah, that's insane.
Whoa. Huh?
There's missing moon rocks, and they're worth a lot of money on the black market.
Yeah, I would imagine. Fucking moon rock.
Goodwill moon rocks is what it's called.
You can have a moon rock in your house?
$5 million, that's all?
People come over, they'd be fucking, they'd think you're the shit.
Man.
Well, that's there's a whole black market for stolen art because there's a lot of people that just, they don't give a fuck. They just want that art, whether it's stolen or not stolen. You know, they just want that art. They could hide it and, you know, have people come over and bring them to their secret lair. Look, this is from Egypt.
Yeah.
This is some shit they stole during the Iraq. Oh, that's
all of a sudden it's like Reagan. Yeah, Reagan and the wolf up there.
That was fun. We're running out of time here. In 10 minutes, we turn into a pumpkin.
We
just did 3 hours.
Hell
like
yeah,
that.
We did.
Isn't that fast?
Yeah, man, it's great doing this. I see why it's like zooms by. It's just fun just to talk.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, that's, you've got the skill of being like, it, your mind is alive. So it's like when you talk to you, it's like it just rolls. It's like seamless information flying all over the place from, you know, back and forth. I think we started talking about Scientology and did not take one breath and got all the way to the faked moon landing and.
Well, there's so much to talk about. You know, that's the thing. The beautiful thing about this world today is there's so much goddamn information.
Yeah.
It's constantly coming at you. And you can't pay attention to all of it. If you do, you'll go mad. Like, one thing I've done to myself lately is force myself to stay offline for, like, many, many hours, days at a time.
I couldn't do it. I would be happy not to. I'm happy to throw my phone aside because I run my own business. I run the record label that we do with my manager and, like, I was packing, like, Sunday night, me and my wife were literally packing all the pre-orders of, like, our vinyl that we did in boxes and shipping them and shit. And we've set up a warehouse and we've done all this shit. So, like, I'm stressed out all the fucking time and I'm in the studio all the time and I've got my kids all the time. So, like, when I get my kids, I, like, love throwing my phone aside. But I would be real bummed if I didn't have, like, if I wasn't able to get on the internet. Because, like, part of my favorite, my non-stress time there's a game called Combat Arms. It's like a free, like, first person shooter game that, mm-hmm. like, online only, that me and my manager and buddies, we go in there and play and kill each other and, like, do that kind of stuff. Or, like, I sit on IRC and talk about shit, or, like,
IRC, whatever. Dude, you're a serious geek.
Yeah, I'm on,
you go on IRC
all the time. I'm on there, right? I mean, I you know, sit on there all the time, but I go on late at night. I'll go on the Bitcoin channels on the Freenode thing, which is their certain kind of communication server, and talk to a lot of developer guys and stuff. Like, man, it's like, that's my favorite thing to do. You know, I don't do Facebook. Like,
don't?
Nah. I mean, I have an official page, but I don't use it. I don't do it
mm-hmm.
socially.
Right.
I'll do Twitter. I always liked Twitter because it's kind of like a one-way thing in a weird way. That I always liked that communication better, but then I got a little overwhelmed by it. Like, I used to be on it all the time, and I used to, like, do shit all the time. And kind of like when I went through my split up with my last ex or whatever, and there was it just got really complicated. There was all of a sudden there was, like, factions of people, and there were people commenting, and there were things. It just became kind of, like, weird. in public. And so after that, I kind of backed it off a little bit. But
yeah, if you go through something in public and everything like is subject to other people's criticisms and evaluations with or without any information whatsoever, and then you watch it all play out, you're like, what?
Yeah. See, right around that time, I had just started to creep into Facebook and started to enjoy it. And I was like posting pictures of like Skeletor and shit that I was into, you know, all day long with my friends. And I'm like keeping up with my friends for the first time. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. And then all like this wave of negativity hit me. And I'm like, fuck that thing. And I threw it away. You know what I mean? So I've never done Facebook since. And then Twitter, I backed off a little bit on, but you know, but I like it a lot better. Like I think I definitely think it's more my speed, but like, you know, if I had it my way, everybody'd be on IRC.
What I like about Twitter is retweeting shit. I like people send me interesting stuff, then I can send it to other people, and that motivates people to send me more interesting stuff. And so then you got this constant network of interesting stories coming your way.
Yes, that's very but, true.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of dumb shit and gossip and stuff that people get caught up in it, but that's just human beings, man. Human beings love stupid shit.
Yeah, they like to be assholes, you know, and just say shit.
And just to fuck with you, to see if they could get a rise out of you, just to get you to react, just so that they know that, you know, Shooter Jennings is a real person on the other end of that.
Yeah, that's why I like to keep it where they think I'm not real. Just kidding. Like, I don't react. No, you know, it's funny, like, Ricky Rackman is a buddy of mine, and he was telling me that he's like, it's funny that people write you nice shit all day long and you never replied to it, but like one guy says something
right.
Like, fuck you, dude.
That's why they do it. You know, it's like that's what people, there's many, many people. Like sometimes someone will, I never go back and forth with people. I used to. It's stupid. It's a waste of energy. But I will go online and read something. If someone says something rude, and then I'll go look at their profile and I'll see, even if they don't say something rude to me, I'll go to see if they say rude things to other people. And you find out that their whole profile is just insults,
doing that, just like, constantly. Hey, asshole. Yeah, I found that out too. One time I said something, I said that I tweet, this is kind of when I backed off of Twitter. I tweeted something about John Mayer being a giant douche because I thought that like he like all of a sudden like was like all Hollywood and he was all played out of Hollywood, and then all of a sudden he buys this place in Montana and he got a poncho and starts growing his hair out and wearing a cowboy hat and doing all this shit. And I was like, give me a fucking break. But he's still hanging out at the fucking Chateau Marmont, but he's like putting this image forward. And I was like, phony, more of the phony shit. So I just called him out on it, and like TMZ like put it, I remember it was Halloween of 2012. I'll never forget it because TMZ fucking puts that shit everywhere. And all of a sudden I'm getting calls from like my brother and like my family, like they're seeing it on like the Yahoo page, like the TMZ, like says this thing about how I called him a king douche and all that. And dude, all of a sudden I'm looking at my Twitter and it says I've got like lots of mentions and the number just keep going up. And like it was like 15,000 15-year-olds telling me what a piece of shit I was and how I was like nobody and I was doing this shit for attention. I mean, I've never seen, so I just started retweeting all of them. Like it was just constantly retweeting all these people telling me what a piece of shit I was, you know? But after that, I was like, man, I mean, it just scared me to death. I was like, that's not worth it.
Do you know John Mayer?
No, I've never met him.
Is it possible that he just like found out that like having a place in Montana is pretty cool?
Probably. Are you friends with him?
I don't know him. No, I heard he's a nice guy though. He hangs out at the Comedy Store sometimes. He's actually done stand up.
I mean, it's
easy to call him a douche. First of all, he's way too pretty.
Some girls that are friends of mine that have been real fucked by him in town. Like some guys, like, you know, you like fuck their friend and then like was a douchebag. So like I've kind of gotten some wind of him that way. And then,
but isn't there two sides to that too? Like, isn't it possible those girls are annoying and they hooked up with him and he was like, you know what, I can't deal with you anymore, and then
before you know the truth
she was like, fuck John Mayer, he's an asshole. But meanwhile he just got bored.
Yeah.
He doesn't like them. Maybe they're annoying. You know, the same type of girls that go on ratting him out and saying these, you know, crazy things about him, those are also the same type of girls that would be annoying if you were John Mayer and you were dating that girl, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's easy. Yeah, but I mean, he's too pretty.
You can say that, but you can also say, like, man, I really don't like his music.
That's true.
And I really didn't like it, his version of Free Fallin', which was like all these like 12-year-old kids think John Mayer wrote this song. And then And so I already had issues, and I'm sure that there are people that have the same kind of issues with me, but it is kind of a well-known fact that John Mayer is a douchebag. I mean, I can guarantee that it's kind of not news.
I don't know the guy.
I don't either.
I would reserve judgment until I meet a person.
That makes you a better man than I in this situation, because I did not reserve judgment. I'm reading this Rolling Stone article, and my blood is boiling.
Because he's bought a ranch in Montana.
Just because he's putting forth this, like, he calls himself the new Neil Young. In the article, he says I'm this generation's Neil Young or something like that, and I was like, that's what flipped the switch for me. Where I was like, fuck you, and your fucking body is a wonderland. Fuck you. that's what it was. I mean, it's like, you know, don't say that. Don't say if I'm this generation's Neil Young, then Norah Jones is this generation's, like, I don't know who he
Janis Joplin.
It was something so, like, that doesn't work. It was like something even worse that he said. But I mean, just to say that just rubbed me the wrong way. I'm a huge Neil Young fan, and I was like,
I am, man, as well.
You got a lot to learn before you're going to be Neil Young, John Mayer.
I worked at a concert before I was a comedian. I worked as a security guard at Great Woods. Great Woods is this place in Mansfield, Massachusetts that has these concerts. And the Neil Young show was the last one I ever worked. I was like, this is too fucking crazy. I was like, I got to get out. Because I thought I was going to get killed. Like, somebody was going to get killed. Yeah, it was madness. Because the way Great Woods works is there's a covered area, and then there's a back area that's like a lawn. And all the security people were assigned to, stop people from bringing in booze. Like, they'd bring in bottles of wine and stuff like that, bottles of whiskey. And also to keep order, like when shit would go haywire. Well, the lawn, the thing about the lawn was there's no assigned seating. So everybody just sat wherever they wanted to on the lawn. Well, people just started fires. And during the Neil Young concert, they had to shut the concert down because the lawn was on fire. People would just, and then fights broke out, and I had a security jacket on, and I covered my security jacket, or I turned it inside out. I don't remember what I did, but I was like, fuck this job. I zipped it up, and I'm like, I'm a normal person now, and I got the fuck out of there. I remember I don't even know if I got paid for the last day of work. I don't know if I punched out. I don't remember shit, but I remember saying to myself, I was probably 19 at the time. It was a long time ago, but I remember saying, this is the last day I work as a security guard, and it was the Neil Young show.
Wow.
Because it was just so crazy. There was fights breaking out, and fucking bottles were flying, and fire, and it was like, this is, what was I getting paid, like $10 an hour or something stupid back then? It was like, this is not worth it.
Wow. That's funny, man.
But it was cool that it was Neil Young.
Yeah.
You know, at least you go out with a bang.
You go out with with Neil Young, and that's like, you know. Yeah, Neil Young's the shit, man.
You know, he lives up in Northern California. He's got a giant ranch.
Ranch up there.
Makes his own diesel.
Yeah, and he's got, like, what did he make that? He made that new iPod thing he's trying to sell, and he's got...
Yeah, what is it? Like, it's his own version of an MP3 player, right?
Yeah, I don't know how you can jump in that game. That seems to me like it always seems like a poor business decision to try. Because if he's not making a phone, you're not going to beat the iPod. Like, nobody buys iPods. They buy phones that have music on them now. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
It's called a Puyo or a...
Yeah, it's called Pono.
Pono. It's like I mean, look, I think it's awesome technology that he's got some shit where it's like the audio quality is way better. But, I mean, you're jumping in. That's like saying...
Is, like, that what the idea is?
Yeah. That the audio quality is a lot better. Yeah.
Is it? Have you ever tried it, Jamie?
No, I haven't tried it, but I know they're trying to sell the audio files, and that's the idea. But no one's listening. The music isn't made for it. They're mastering for digital quality for iTunes, so you have to remaster everything.
It's kind of weird. I mean, it seems like a losing game to jump into, but although, you know, a guy like him, like, I mean, they crowdfunded it.
Yeah, that's the weird thing, right? Is that it's crowdfunded, but can you play stuff from your?
Yeah.
Can you transfer stuff from your Apple, from iTunes to that? Will it sound better?
Will it play?
Ideally,
like,
they say yes.
Ideally,
yeah.
How much better will it sound though? A lot of time you're listening to it through shitty ass fucking.
It's supposed to make iTunes stuff sound better. I don't believe that.
Quote unquote. That's what they've got, some crazy algorithm, and that's what is going on inside.
Really?
Yeah, but I mean, you start getting into art. This sounds better versus this sounds better. Yeah, it does, but I don't like it. Do you like it? You like it. I don't like it. Okay, well, let's just move on to tomorrow because this is a silly argument.
Yeah, but they're pointing out in this article about it that it doesn't mean jack shit if you don't have really good headphones behind it. Mm-hmm. You know? It's kind of interesting. What's interesting is that, like, see if people react to this and they up the sound quality for phones.
The video just died?
Yeah. Well, we ran out of time?
Yeah, just a heads up.
Oh, all right. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. This podcast is over. The people on iTunes can get another couple of minutes. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to MeUndies. MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com/Rogan and get 20% off your first order. Do that by September 1st. So MeUndies.com/Rogan. Thanks also to Audible. Go to audible.com/Joe. Get one free audio book and 30 free days of Audible service. Thanks also to onnit.com. That is O-N-N-I-T. Use the code word Rogan and save yourself 10% off any and all supplements. Shooter Jennings, this was fun, man. We got to do this more often.
Great, man.
Do it again. I would love it anytime you want.
I've got a stack of vinyls for you that I forgot to
bring. Bring in the vinyls. Next time you come, whatever, man. We'll figure something out. Thank you very much, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on the air, man.
See you guys.
Dude, that was fun. Zoom bot. I want to do DMT, man.
Okay.
That's all I could think about since we had that conversation. Was that all?